Tonight on The Download, from the movie Rough Night, writers and director Lucia Aniello and Paul Downs. From the web series Dope-Ass Mom, Andrea Levoff. And our first ever new segment, The Download on Chicago Business. Now, here's your host, a man who also has his own web series, Lame Old Dad, Justin Kaufman.
Oh, I thought we were friends, Pete. Oh, lame and old. It's a double. It's a good web series, though. It's really strong. They're you can find them on YouTube. They're 12 minutes each. Real strong web series. Lame Old Dads. Good evening, everybody. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have an outstanding show for you tonight as the weather rolls through our neighborhoods, our areas. Although downtown Chicago is still nothing. But I know that there are some thunderstorms that have gone through the western suburbs, Joliet, areas south as well. So hope you're staying dry. But right now, we are not feeling the effects on Michigan Avenue. Instead, you're seeing people in their summer best, which is code for T-shirts. A lot of T-shirts today on Michigan Avenue. We got a great show lined up tonight. I'm excited to say that we are starting a brand new segment. We've been talking about this for the last couple days. The Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. It's coming up tonight. We start, I think, with a perfect first guest. The CEO and co-founder of the company ShipBob, Dhruv Saxena, will be in studio. We'll talk about ShipBob, with big announcement this week. It's in the Tribune today that they have raised $17.5 million to expand their business. They want to hire over 100-plus workers to their workforce, double their force in the next year, all because essentially e-commerce for small businesses is falling behind and it needs to pick up. You talk about the giants like Walmart and Amazon, and they have changed the way that e-commerce interacts with consumers in the way that we expect our packages, not just in a day anymore. Now it's like in hours. If I order something, I'm going to go ahead and get this dress. Click. I have an expectation that that's on my doorstep within the next day. And, you know, if you're a small business, it's hard to keep up with that. Obviously, if you want to take that on yourself, that's even harder. So that's what ShipBob's all about, to give small businesses an opportunity to compete with the giants and give shipping, give them an actual platform to ship and to compete. So we'll talk with ShipBob coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Tonight at 8 o'clock, the movie Rough Night with Scarlett Johansson is going to hit theaters this weekend. It's getting good reviews. In studio tonight, Lucia Aniello and Paul Downs, the writers and director of the movie. Both the couple are writers and directors, of course, of the hit Comedy Central show Broad City. And they will be in studio to talk about how they write the script, Rough Night, Broad City, all that coming up at 8 o'clock. They'll be my guests at the big table tonight. Later in the show, the 9 o'clock hour, Dope-Ass Mom, the Andrea Levoff will be here. We'll talk about her approach to motherhood. She's got a web series, which is hilarious. And we will talk with her about it and her Dope-Ass Mom Summit that she does to sort of reclaim, to be dope ass, I guess is the, I'm not sure exactly what the phrase is there. And then later in the show, we'll play the worst. It's Tuesday night, 312-981-7200. So a lot to do tonight. I'm excited. Always excited when you get a new segment, you know? I feel like last week we did the guests, or what you talking about, or what are you saying? With Ted McClellan, it was about people calling in from all over the Midwest, and Ted could guess where you were from based on your accent and some of the cultural signs. What do you call a fountain that gives you water? A bubbler. Wisconsin. That was fun. But tonight we'll have some fun with the small business. We'll talk small business. Noon weather and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago, starring those who know it well. Let's take a break, and then we'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. We got a big one, so let's get started with the carryout. Here are today's top stories. Attorney General Jeff Sessions spoke in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee today for 2.5 hours. Top that, Comey. Sessions did nothing to really shed light on the investigation except to say that all collusion was a lie and any conversation he had with the president was private and protected by executive privilege. When pressed on how to define executive privilege, Sessions said he couldn't answer that because of executive privilege. I mean, he's right. There was a lot of privilege today in the Senate chambers. Sessions, who looks like the neighbor in the movie The Burbs, surely you looked in the furnace. He got real mad when his character was called into question by no one in particular. But at the end of the day, this was probably a win for Trump and the Republicans because, once again, there's no smoking gun, and the more time spent preempting daytime soaps, it's just going to anger America. So sports analogy here, this is essentially when the team is up and they try to run out the clock. The only problem is it's the first quarter. And the loser? Me. Because I realized I didn't turn off CNN afterwards, and now I've got Wolf Blitzer in my head saying, breaking news! It's been 3 hours. Can't be breaking news anymore. Also, didn't the hearing have all the feel of a former senator wanting to come back to his old workplace to brag? Oh, well, hey guys, nice to be here. What's for lunch in the cafeteria? We cater at the new place. Losers. Hey, if you're finally adjusting to your property tax bill, the roller coaster announcer just got on the PA. Who wants to hear it go again? Keep your hands and feet inside the car and enjoy your ride. Cook County Clerk David Orr announced today that next year's bill will be 10% more for Chicagoans, about 5% or so for suburban Cook County. So another $350 a year for people who own property valued at $200,000, which in Chicago means double that for anyone that likes more than one room in their living space. Doesn't like to sleep where their kitchen's at. That's not good. Our retail woes continue. Sears announced they're cutting 400 more jobs. The once retail giant continues to struggle. The question I have when I read these stories is, A, do retail giants cut jobs and close stores because they can't make ends meet? Or is it B, do they cut jobs and close stores because they're used to making a gazillion dollars in profit and they want to continue making that at all costs? That's why the overall, quote, retail is suffering storyline is so hard to swallow, because when the corporations that own them will do whatever it takes to keep the highest profit margin, even if it means taking away jobs and brick-and-mortar anchors for communities, I just don't buy it. And still, try to buy a brand-name shirt at a Sears. Have you done that? Have you tried to buy a Tommy Bahamas? Maybe a polo? Nobody's bringing the price down. It's it's still $70. So I just don't get it, and this story just kind of riles me up. But hey, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we can talk in our business segment about it. Doubtful. An eagle crashed into a Gold Coast hotel, proving even eagles drink too much on Rush Street. Well, no, man, we don't let drunk birds in the Hugos. Sorry, you got to go to Butch McGuire's. In weather, finally, some big rains coming through, albeit not downtown, but thunderstorms pretty much everywhere else. Hopefully it'll cool off a bit. That's always good. In sports, speaking of cooling off, the Cubs continue to underwhelm us in 2017. Tonight, the Cubs shake it up. Anthony Rizzo moves to the leadoff spot. And what happened? Huh? He hit a solo home run. This is a problem. I mean, I love the fact that the drama's great, that Anthony Rizzo actually hit a home run in his first at-bat ever leading off. But guess what? Nobody was on base. That being said, the Cubs are blowing the Mets out. But, I mean, there really has been a problem at leadoff. I mean, there can't be any better indication that you moved your slugger to the top spot and the fact that you cannot replace Dexter Fowler. Nobody's talking about that. But the Cubs had all of this depth, all of it, and they still can't replace the one guy that was their leadoff hitter. The White Sox won last night at home, beat the Orioles, still in last place in the Central. The Sox drafted a third baseman yesterday named Berger. I mean, lots of poster possibilities there, right? If the kid actually has the best right-handed power in the draft and he hits a lot of doubles, I don't know, maybe he's funny in the clubhouse, double cheese, huh? Hits a lot of doubles and he's cheesy, does a lot of puns. I don't know, Mayor McCheese? I mean, the promos write themselves. Let's get this kid up to the majors stat. We need some good nicknames in Chicago. Did LeBron really say in a presser after the game that he's never been a part of a super team? And he believed it himself? After the Warriors beat the Cavs in 5, King James talked about the issue of our time, NBA super teams, seeing the Warriors overwhelm them. But really? I mean, he doesn't recognize he started that? I mean, I'm confused. You know what? I just need to stop with the carry out, and I just need to go to YouTube, or I need to take a vacation, take my talents to South Beach. God, where have I heard that before? I feel like I know that phrase. What does talent mean? I don't know. Anyway, as a Chicagoan, it's nice to see LeBron whine like an aged Sauvignon Blanc. Also, the season's over, so the rumors are out there that the Golden State Warriors are going to skip the White House visit in some sort of protest against President Trump. Good. I was worried that I didn't know Steph Curry's politics up to this point. I was really concerned. I was watching him on the court in game four, and I'm like, I wonder what he thinks about health care. Come on. Kevin Durant, I bet you he's got something to say on tax reform. The Bears had their mandatory mini camps this week up in Lake Forest. Did everybody show? Good. That's at least a start. No goofy contract nonsense, although Trubisky still hasn't signed. Let's get that done. Let's not, or let's show him tapes of Cade McNown. One of the two, right? Coach Fox also said Danny Trevathan, Kyle Long, and Zach Miller may not be ready for training camp in July. I wouldn't worry about it. If that's one area where the Bears excel, it's depth. Can you taste the sarcasm dripping off my tonsils? It's officially the offseason for the NHL, and rumor has it that the Hawks are looking to deal a core player soon. That's all I know. I'm intrigued. And finally tonight, a new floating water park is coming to Lake Michigan. It's going to be in Whiting, Indiana. It's called the Whoa Zone. First of all, why would anyone need more than the playpen? I mean, bikini watermelon shots while listening to Diplo while dancing on rafts? Oh, Whoa Zone's for kids. Got it. Okay. Well, I hope the kids don't fall in the water. Stay away from the chromium water slide. But it looks cool. It does. It looks really cool. All right, that's the carryout for June 13, 2017. Hey, we're adding extra large cups to the menu tonight. Would you like an extra large Coke? It's really just 3/4 ice with a dollop of soda. All right, coming up, the download on Chicago Business, our brand new segment. Right after the news with Rob Martyr. I'm excited. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
You know, Justin, I heard you in the carryout. You were trying to remember where you heard a quote from before. So through much exhaustive research and labor, I did find that quote. Here it is. This is from 2010.
Okay. Ball, man, this is very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
There it is. That's
there
right.
You go. That's the
I
quote.
That's
see?
What I was saying. I thought it was a president or something.
See?
But now I remember
to take my talents to South Beach. That wasn't a super team, was it?
No, I couldn't.
Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade.
Organic. That's the organic way you'd grow a basketball
so,
team.
So, real quick, I know we need to get on with things, but, you know, Jeff Sessions, of course, dominating the news cycle right now. In fact, he's second in my rundown here. But we've been noticing quirky little things with this Trump administration, from his ties to Comey blending in the blue room and trying to, you know, seep between the drapes there and whatnot. Did you happen to see? I caught Sessions' opening statements where, you know, he had them prepared on a piece of paper. Now, he had his readers on. He's an older gentleman. You know, he put the readers on. But the font on his page was like 54.
Oh, that's hilarious.
There was like one letter per page.
That's so good. Of course it is.
It was huge. And it was one of these things that jumped out at me. Here I'm supposed to be paying attention to what he's saying. And all I can see is the font on his page is enormous.
That's great. You know, he's like, make it as big as you can.
Ew, scurrilous. He had that underlined, scurrilous.
that was 74 font, scurrilous.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tonight, I'm very excited to launch a new segment here on the show. It's called The Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. It's a weekly segment where we talk shop with Chicago area business owners because the town has a long history of being an economic engine, not just for the Midwest, but for the whole country. And that hasn't changed as Chicago entrepreneurs continue to grow their businesses, and we want them to share their stories to help better understand ours. Tonight, we kick off with a perfect first guest. Dhruv Saxena, his company is called ShipBob. Not only is ShipBob a local small business, but their goal is to help other small businesses. ShipBob is a shipping solution for business. Any business owner will tell you that the world of e-commerce and shipping can be overwhelming and have an impact on the bottom line. This in part because of the giants like Amazon or Walmart. They've created an expectation with customers that if you order something online, it will be on your doorstep within days, not weeks, and in some cases, hours. And that's where ShipBob comes in, to try and help small businesses move their wares in a speed that customers expect in 2017. ShipBob rocked the business world today as they announced they've raised $17.5 million to expand. They're hoping to double their workforce in the next year. This after opening warehouses on the West Coast in LA and San Francisco to add to their New York and Chicago hubs as well. Dhruv Saxena is the co-founder and CEO of ShipBob, and he is my guest tonight. Dhruv, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Justin, thank you for having me.
All right, so let's get into this. This idea, which is brilliant, came out of another business that you were involved in. Explain how this concept came about.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was me and my co-founder, Divya, and we graduated from our school and we came down to Chicago. And while we had our full-time jobs, we were always experimenting with other ideas. So one of the business ideas we were experimenting with was this concept of, you know, people have photos on their cell phone and they want to print and mail it to their friends and family. So instead of walking to a CVS or a Walgreens, you literally text the photo to us. And we both had an engineering background, so we had a bot running on the phone. So essentially, you would text the photo to us, our bot would print that photo, and then mail it to your friends and family.
Great.
And so this was great. You know, we didn't have to do too much work.
Right. Simple idea.
Simple idea, yeah. Everything was sort of automated for us, like the pictures would get printed. The only physical piece of it was actually going to the post office and mailing your pictures out. And because we had a full-time jobs, we really did not want to spend our time doing the packaging and the mailing. And so we said, okay, how do other small e-commerce businesses figure out their packaging and the shipping, right? And we realized that there really isn't a good solution, and that got us thinking. So we would stand outside the post office at Willis Towers basement, and we would have a form, and we would ask people walking into that post office, like, how much would you pay if we came to your office and picked up the package that you wanted to ship, and we would package it for you? And people say, oh, that sounds like a great idea. We would pay you X amount of dollars. And we say, okay, maybe there is a business here.
Because as a small business, when you were doing this business, you saw others doing the same thing. They'd be at the post office, like, you know, like spending their time actually putting packages together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why there's always a long line at the post office, right? And I don't know how many people like enjoy going to the post office. So.
Well, I mean, let's talk about this, because what did you know about shipping? What did you have to do to get into that business? Because I would assume that that would be a difficult logistical nightmare. I mean, just the idea of understanding how shipping works and you know, applying your small business acumen to it.
That's so true, right? So because we didn't know how this was supposed to be done, we just did it. I guess not knowing is actually a major advantage as long as you're willing to learn. So we didn't know a whole lot about shipping, but what we realized that if we talked to, like, we knew the people who would need our service because we were our own customers in a lot of ways. So we did a lot of surveys and research around, like, is there enough of a market? Once we actually build our product, would there be enough people who would use the service? So I guess that was one of our learnings, that, you know, we fell in love with this problem and not really with the solution. So when you fall in love with the problem, then you are able to look at various different solutions to solve it. So that allowed us to iterate over a large number of solutions before arriving at the one.
Yeah, that's interesting. As someone with business background and engineering background, I mean, is that really what draws you to the idea of small business or being an entrepreneur, the idea of solving problems?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. So as an engineer, you're taught to, like, creatively solve problems, and then shipping seemed like a massively unsolved problem. So this was a great way for us to put our engineering heads together and figure out a large number of solutions which would work. So the current iteration of ShipBob, it's not like we arrived on it on day zero, but now it's always been evolving, and we assembled a very, very intelligent set of people who help us constantly, you know, take the solution
well
forward.
It started, and I find this very fascinating, the idea that it started just in Chicago within a 5-mile radius. You really had to test the idea if you had the manpower, the wherewithal, and if there was actually a supply and demand for this kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I remember, like, the first order we got, we took an Uber to pick up the item from this person's office, and it cost us more in that Uber ride than to actually ship the package. So we quickly realized that Uber is not going to be the way to make this work. Though, because we had some very, very loyal customers who were, you know, shipping out like their own e-commerce items through us, they told us like, hey, you guys are always coming to my office to pick up the same items from my office. Why don't you just store a little bit of my product at your office? And when I get orders, I'll just let you know. And you guys just package and ship it out from your office.
I mean, you would assume that would be the turning point in the business. The idea that you could be a house for the actual product and you could be in control of how it gets shipped.
Oh, absolutely. Right. So once we got that insight, I think it changed our business overnight, because now we went from just being a very convenient solution, just a convenience factor, to actually helping these e-commerce businesses run their business better, right? So that allowed us to create some very sophisticated inventory management tools, order management tools, stuff which businesses need to run their entire e-commerce operations. That got us thinking into how do bigger companies like Amazon manage all their orders, which really expanded our vision.
Well, okay, so let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Dhruv Saxena is the co-founder and CEO of ShipBob. They kind of rocked the business world today with the announcement. It was in the Tribune. It was in Blue Sky. They've raised $17.5 million to essentially expand this the business, the shipping business, to help small businesses with shipping to compete with the customer's expectations, really.
Yeah.
Let's continue the conversation. We'll talk about what it looks like to expand this and what's the need as more and more retailers skip brick and mortar and go right to the e-commerce world. Dhruv Saxena on the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. Stay with us.
It's business time.
It's the Download on Chicago Business. Dhruv Saxena is the co-founder and CEO of ShipBob. They're in the news today as they have raised $17.5 million to expand their shipping solution company, essentially to give shipping options to small businesses to take the challenges of e-commerce out of some small businesses' hands. You know, as you expand a business like this, go from, like we talked about, just a light bulb idea where you're not even making enough money to cover the Uber.
Yeah.
To expanding to New York, to LA, to San Francisco, to open warehouses. What are the challenges in doing that? Because it seems that that wasn't necessarily the first inkling or idea that you had for this business.
Yeah, right. So that's such a great question, because ultimately, what we are trying to do is help our e-commerce businesses run their business better. So one of the ways that they can effectively manage their business is if they can get their e-commerce orders delivered to their customers faster. So it was almost like, okay, if we need to add more value for our clients, what do we need to do? And opening up fulfillment centers to satisfy that need seems super obvious. So the strategy around there is like, how do we get our fulfillment centers located such that we are able to cover like the maximum number of people in the shortest time frame possible.
I can't even imagine. I mean, if it were me and my buddy, and we were like, "All right, we're gonna do a business," and hey, shipping's a great idea. Let's get into it. Yeah, we'll pick stuff up from the post office for you to fulfillment centers and you know warehouses in New York City and Los Angeles and San Francisco. I mean, beyond just the scope of it and understanding how you have to organize your business, talk about just the challenges of expanding it. I mean, you have to have employees in those fulfillment centers, and you have to you essentially have gone from two guys in an Uber to, you know, you have hundreds of people that are working for you.
Yeah, no. So one of the early things that we realized was that we just have to make sure we hire people who are way smarter than we are, right? And that makes our life so much easier, because then they can make all those hard decisions and I can be here. Right? Every single city that we've expanded into, like, we have a team of three or four folks who go into every city, and they are so married into the culture of ShipBob that they know exactly who to hire and what to look out for. So they are able to make those hiring decisions, which are very, very consistent with the way that we would have hired and expanded the team. So sitting in Chicago and trying to micromanage your team in LA or in San Francisco is never going to work, but you just have to trust that the people that you have on the ground there are basically living the culture and, you know, have the same ethos around ShipBob, which you do. And I think that's a strategy to win.
You know, as you compete with standards, you know, customer standards, I mean, we've seen over time, just in the last 10 years, Amazon, even I wouldn't even say the 5 years, Amazon has found a way, even Walmart, to improve upon their systems. Mm-hmm. They, I mean, with fulfillment centers and drones and yeah. trucks and everything, and even some of the other models, I think of Zappos and the way that they've revolutionized buying shoes.
Yeah.
And what they do with shipping, the idea that you can ship back, you can move. I mean, the customer's expectation of a purchase online has changed dramatically. How much do you as a shipping business have to stay with those trends, understand what the new wrinkles are for what the customer wants online?
Right. So for our clients, they absolutely realize that they are not just competing amongst themselves. They're also competing against the big boys of Amazon, Walmart, and Target. So for them to win their customers over, they have to delight them. And some of the ways of delighting your customer is through faster delivery, right? Nobody wants to get their packages arrive, like, you know, delayed. They want it right now. So we are helping our clients get those packages delivered faster. One of the other ways is that because you are a small to mid-sized e-commerce business, using ShipBob, you have an opportunity of demonstrating your brand. So we allow our clients to use their own custom branded boxes. We allow them to put in a thank you card and stuff like that.
So it's not the Amazon box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So it is like the box, which is like almost like an experience. So when you buy something from one of our merchants, because the merchants care so much about the brand, the box and everything inside the box absolutely represents what they stand for. So that would not be possible, you know, if you were just selling on Amazon.
It was mentioned today in the Trib that you guys were able to secure $17.5 million in funding. When I think about where we're at, because that is coupled with, if you were in the newspaper as well, story after story about retail and the brick and mortar situation getting more and more dire when it comes to the business landscape. Talk about, I mean, there's an acceleration to this business, mostly because as more and more retail shifts to the e-commerce world,
right,
there are going to be more and more people who are going to get in the shipping business. Do you recognize that as a CEO? Do you recognize that you have to be not only first to market to compete with the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Targets, like you mentioned, but that there will be other startups that are going to get in this game too?
Absolutely. Yeah. So as a startup, you're always wary of competition, but I think if you keep worrying about competition, you'll always be like a fast follower and not a leader. So for us, as our team grows, it's very, very important for us internally to not think about what the competition is doing, but start thinking on what are the different ways that will add value to our clients. And if you keep thinking on those lines, you'll always be sort of ahead, or you'll be, you know, indifferent to what your customer is doing, because our customers already know what they want, and it is our job to help them get that. So irrespective of what our competition strategy is, we just have to follow our client strategy, which is getting their packages delivered faster. So doing that allows us to be, you know, not concerned about competition.
My last question really has to do, I mean, you've written about this as well. I mean, a shipping company like ShipBob doesn't have to be in Chicago. It could be in Silicon Valley. It could be in New York. There are a lot of different places that a shipping company startup could operate. But you chose Chicago. You came out of the University of Illinois. You chose the idea of being here in town. What drew you here, and what keeps you here?
Well, we love the weather, especially during the summer months.
Yeah, summer, sure.
No, but so my co-founder actually went to UFI. I went to Purdue. So we both went to schools here. So when you're starting a startup, it's super important that you have your first set of customers really close to you, because your first set of customers are not going to be, you know, the real customer. They're going to be your friends, family, or your mom and your dad. So it was easier for us to find our first customers here, because they're right here. And we can, you know, make the feedback loop way faster. Mm-hmm. And then as we expanded the team, In the Valley, for example, on like where every other company is a startup, like the kind of people you attract are very different, because they're just in it to figure out if their startup is going to grow really quickly. If so, then they're in it for the ride. Otherwise, they don't really have that, you know, that.
Yeah, they're not looking to sustain a business necessarily. They're just looking for something to sell.
For something really quick. But but at ShipBob, the people that we attracted right from day one were in it for the very, very long run. And they believed in the mission and the why we were doing it. So we were able to attract the right set of investors and the right people.
Great first download on Chicago business. Dhruv Saxena is the co-founder and CEO of ShipBob, a local company that is revolutionizing shipping solutions for small businesses. Dhruv, pleasure to meet you, and congratulations on your success, and continue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new comedy Rough Night is in theaters on the 16th. Stars Scarlett Johansson, Zoe Kravitz, Kate McKinnon, Alana Glazer and Paul Downs. Paul Downs co-wrote the movie with director Lucia Aniello. The movie follows a bachelorette party gone wrong with hilarious results.
I probably have HPV now.
Whatever, we all have HPV. I don't have HPV.
If you've had sex after the year 1991, then you do have HPV.
Oh, then I have like a ton of HPV. Clumps and clumps of it. Okay.
Lucia and Paul have been working together for years after meeting at UCB in New York City and have entertained us with their work on Comedy Central's Broad City. Lucia has written and directed episodes, and Paul's a writer and star. He plays Abby's boss, Trey, at the Solstice. They're in town promoting the movie. My pleasure to welcome to the Download tonight. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Let's talk about the movie. I mean, this is the debut for you guys, in the sense. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about where the script comes from. I mean, you guys have been working together for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk about getting involved in writing a feature film.
The idea came to me, and I spoke it out loud. Lucia wrote down notes, and... It's a very quick process. Right, right. Yeah. Usually I just speak stream of consciousness.
He spews 120 pages at a time.
Yeah, she's a very fast typer, which is why I knew she was the right partner for me.
Ingrained misogyny lives among us, you know?
I don't understand that. But what was the question?
So talk about, I mean, where does an idea like the idea of making a transition from what you guys have done on stage and internet, television, to film?
I feel like we've always wanted to make a movie.
Yes.
Lucia studied film. I'll speak for her. You can speak for me. Again, ingrained misogyny. She studied film. And
I did.
Go for it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think I had studied film in college. I wasn't necessarily like, I am going to be a film director. I knew I was actually just generally more interested in comedy. So I went the route of taking improv classes because I was like, let's just get in there. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if I necessarily wanted to write or direct or perform. So I kind of did a little bit of all of it.
Right.
That's where we met, doing improv at UCB level one class. Really hot. And so basically what happened is, you know, we started, you know, we were on an improv team together. So we were doing improv together. Paul had quite a bit of success at the theater pretty quickly. I did not. So I said, hey, why don't we start making videos instead so that I can do some stuff too. So we started making videos, and I think I want to say like 2007, 2008, we started making some mm-hmm. pretty poorly viewed videos. Mm-hmm. Underrated, in my opinion. And
but ahead of our time, I think.
Yeah, you can find them all online if you go deep on that Polyglot YouTube.
Do you guys
page.
Do the dark web? You got to go to the dark web.
It's on Silk Road only, our
yeah.
own video.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. I don't know because I don't go back. You know? I only look forward.
Yeah. Stronger together. And so basically, we started making videos, and we were doing that pretty consistently for a few years, and we moved out to L.A., made more videos. And at the same time, we, you know, knew Abby and Alana from improv, the improv world. And so then we started doing – they got the show. They asked us to work on it. So we started writing TV. And that was, definitely a different vibe just because, you know, formatting a story for 22 minutes versus what we had been doing, which was like 3 or 4 minutes – it was a different thing.
We just keep expanding length. Really. Yeah, really. That's all we're doing.
What's the learning curve, though? I mean, from mm-hmm. being able to express a joke on a digital video
yeah.
to
mm-hmm.
go into 22 minutes to go into an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they essentially the same idea?
In a way. I mean, I think it's the best kind of – for us, it was the best kind of education to make stuff and figure it out and write it and edit it and be in it and kind of touch every area of it. So in a way, I think they're all the same. You have the same challenges and the same way you want to deliver the joke. Yeah. But –
I'd say digital and TV are more similar because they're generally viewed at your house kind of alone-ish or maybe with a few people.
Depending, yeah.
Right.
And depending on how popular you are. Yeah. I'm not trying to put
that. And if you have a really nice, media room.
Yeah.
It depends on your sectional.
Yeah.
If you can fit people, maybe you watch with a couple.
But once you get to making a movie, I do think we learned a little bit like how to – you have to make a joke for a room of strangers who are all watching together, and it kind of requires a slightly different – pacing and setup and punchline, and it's a little bit different, and I think that we learned a lot and got to make the version of the movie that I think we're genuinely really proud of.
When you think about the work that you've done both in the digital space and television and as opposed to what you do on Rough Night, What are the biggest challenges of that growth? When you go for your debut mm-hmm. film and you make it, is it editing? Is it killing babies? Like, what is it that I mean, that's a, of course, a writing expression, but yes, I mean,
yes. Oh, yeah. Thank God.
Oh, thank God. What is the challenge in making that transition?
I think that it's when you're making stuff for the internet, truly nobody cares what you're putting up there because you're only representing yourself.
Especially the dark web. Really, truly anything. Okay.
And so there's just very little outside thoughts or pressures or needs or whatever. And when TV, it's a little bit more, you know, you have to, I guess, sell commercials. We have no part in that. But you know what I mean? It's
you
slightly
get notes,
different.
You get
yeah, you do get
notes.
Notes and, right. And for movies, you get even more just because you have to reach far more people and you have to be appealing to a lot of different people. But you also still want the voice to be, you know, pretty specific.
Do you figure that out in script or do you figure that out when you get to set? I mean, where does that come in where you have to start to expand the kind of joke that you want to tell based on a bigger audience?
I'll brag for you.
I think
in script, obviously we do, you know, many, many, many drafts and try and refine what we're doing. But when we get to set, I do think that's one of Lucia's biggest strengths other than just physical strength. She's a very strong woman.
It's mostly... my thighs.
Yeah,
and
she's
butt,
got very yeah. strong legs. Is to be able to, if something isn't really working as well as we thought it might on the page, to change it and to tailor it to the actor or actress in the moment and sort of bring it to life or make it something totally new.
Well, I was mm-hmm. going to say, I mean, this movie and what makes it work as well is the ensemble that mm-hmm. you put together. Yeah. I mean, some tremendous talent.
And yeah.
I mean, how can you rely on the people who are in the ensemble to, if a joke is not working, if you as comedy writers mm-hmm. and directors, you say, this isn't working, what can we do to make it better? How much do you rely on the ensemble to be a part of that conversation?
I find that it's almost, we never actually say or feel like it's not working because I think we are lucky enough to work with such talented comedians that they either make it work because they can or they've already changed it. And, you know, when you work with someone like Jillian Bell, for example, everything she does is liquid funny. She makes anything funny. But also when she changes it and gives you something new, we watch takes and we're like, what are we going to use? Everything she does is so funny.
Mm-hmm. That's a good problem.
And
to have,
everyone
right?
is better, and yeah, and yeah. different, and that's true of all of them. I mean, I singled her out, but
for sure,
even Scarlett is so good at adjusting and being natural and real because she's such a talented actor that she's able to change it and make it work and make it right for the character. And because they all, I think, approach it from, you know, very specific character
right.
points of view, they were able to make things work that we might not have been able to.
Yeah, I would say honestly. Not to reverse brag.
Oh, good. Take back a brag.
No.
Like
to
that.
Diss us.
Oh,
honestly,
to diss us.
To diss
oh,
ourselves.
That's good.
The
yeah.
diss brag, yeah.
yeah.
The diss brag. Is that honestly, anytime something really wasn't working, it was just the writing wasn't right for the moment.
I don't remember those instances, but, you know, if she says so, I don't have a very good memory, and that's true.
That is true. But I do think that, you know, we all, the actors and, you know, we all really came together and, like, if something felt like, oh, this character would maybe say this in this moment. Like, we're totally down to adapt and adjust in the moment on the day.
Right.
Because when it comes down to it, I think, you know, the most honest things that the characters would say are always going to be the funniest, always going to be the best. So
and
we
were
to hone in on that.
So lucky that everybody in the movie came with things and stuff they wanted to try. And they were pretty inspired and enthusiastic
yeah.
about it. I mean, Zoe Kravitz always had great ideas mm-hmm. and always brought things that we were like, that is so good. That's
yeah.
so, because you don't really have the time always to
workshop.
Read a script and live in the universe of the one character
right,
because you're
right.
writing, you know, you're thinking about the story and you're thinking about everybody and how they interact. And so when they get in there and they think about it just from their private life and what the character lives beyond the page, it's really kind of incredible.
And you can feel it. And what I love about it too is the concept that you can tell by the way that there's such great experience in improvisation from the character, not just the ensemble, but from the writers, that mm-hmm. that you are, as you said, and I want to take a break and I want to talk more about chasing that moment.
I need a break.
we'll take a break. Lucia Aniello is the director and also the co-writer with Paul Downs, who stars in the film Rough Night, which is being released on the 16th, starring Scarlett Johansson, Zoe Kravitz, Kate McKinnon, a million people.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
great. It's a great lineup.
Demi Moore. We got Ty Burrell. We got them all.
Yeah.
Got them all. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The new movie, Rough Night, out in theaters on the 16th. My guests in studio, the writers Paul Downs and Lucia Aniello, who also directed the film. The film, A Bachelorette Party Gone Wrong. Hilarious results, of course. The ensemble, we'll get back to the idea of chasing that moment. We were kind of talking before the break. And that's a part that I think a lot of movies will miss. And they'll miss because they have something, they're rigid, or maybe the directors or the writers are disconnected. So talk about the idea of the positives of being the writers, being the director, being improvisers, and having that skill to be able to chase a moment when the moment needs to be chased.
Yeah.
I think.
Go ahead.
What were you going to say? No.
I was going to say, like, it's a really. It's a balance because you only have a certain amount of time to get a scene. And so you want to go and, like, chase that thing. Like, oh, this feels right. This feels good. Do that again. But you also don't want to be masturbatory about it, because that's can be a really big issue for I think a fair amount of comedies, where it just feels like, wow, they're goofing off and having fun, and boy didn't they think they were funny, you know. And so we try to have it serve less like this person's taken off with the scene, and more like, is this the right thing for the story overall?
I think we have been lucky enough that it succeeds in Broad City, and I think in Rough Night it does as well, that having an improv background helps, in that, you know, you're taught to follow the fun, you follow the fun. But I'm going to steal from Ricky Gervais. I actually saw him talk once about improvising in the British Office and how the written line was always better than the improvised line. And the improvised line always did better on the day. The crew broke and everybody laughed and the camera was shaking because the guy was laughing.
Yeah.
But in the end, when they were editing and they were, you know, whittling it down, the thing that they found worked the best was the thing that they wrote. But what I think Abby and Alana on Broad City and all of the women in Rough Night have this ability to make it fun and make it feel natural in a way that they change things and they'll add a little something or they'll have a button.
But they don't lose the spirit of the line.
Exactly.
Right. But it's not like we're like, okay, and at the end of the scene, we want to do 5 more minutes where you berate somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's
not the kind of like open-ended just invention. It's more character point of view.
Well, you have to trust. I mean, again, you have the ability to trust yourselves. I mean, in processes, you started at one point to write the script. You're now on the set. You have to assume that you're involved in the editing and what's next. I mean, there are points when you have to trust your former self.
Yeah.
In the process.
Yes, but it's interesting that sometimes your former self is right and sometimes it's very wrong. And so in those instances, I do think coming from the improv world, it's easier to abandon those things and say, let's find the fun thing and make it work, you know.
Though I don't think we were ever on set like, this isn't working, really. It was never quite like that. It was just like, oh, this somebody might just have an idea for a little thing. But
or this is better. Let's make
What is a challenge on a set like Rough Night? I mean, because you're right. I think that you would be nonstop fun. What are the challenges when trying to do a comedy with such great people?
Well, truly, there's so many people.
That's one of the things is just covering all the people, because there's 5 women. 5 of the funniest women on the planet. Mm-hmm. And to me, the biggest challenge was when, just because of time, we would have to move on from something and it would be like, can we do one more? You know, because I think they all had a lot of fun together and they were really inventive and really fun. And, you know, you don't ever want to say to Kate McKinnon, no, you can't have one more. It's like, yes,
it feels
do whatever
sacrilegious.
You want. Yeah, so that was the biggest challenge, was just time and being able to sort of manage all of that, because there was so much good material.
You guys mentioned Broad City. I mean, I think both Rough Night and Broad City have the same feel of chemistry in the way that when you watch Broad City, you can tell that, there's something about not just the improvisation background, but they like each other. There's a chemistry to it and to the cast.
Yeah.
How important is that for you guys as artists, as writers, as directors, as filmmakers, chemistry?
It's honestly the most important thing, because
100%, yeah.
I could just watch 2 people who have chemistry just talk about what they eat for breakfast if they are really charming and
like
lovely
Scarlett
and like
me,
each other.
For example.
right.
You know, I think that was pretty self-evident. But yeah, I think that is one thing that people really respond to in Broad City, is that Abby and Alana are friends and they do make each other laugh and they do have fun. And we were so lucky that these women all got along and had so much fun together and became fast friends. Some of them knew each other and, you know, Jillian and Kate worked together and we've known Alana forever. But they all really bonded.
It was unbelievable.
We keep saying to marketing, like, why don't you guys release like all of the behind the scenes? Because they sang and laughed and did bits and they had so much fun. Honestly, I was jealous. It's so much fun because, you know, we were thinking about timing and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And rewriting jokes, and Lucia's thinking about coverage. But they had a great time.
Well, so I'll ask that. I'll follow up with that question. It sounds like they had a lot of fun. Did you guys have fun? Because right away, I mean, it is a lot of more. I mean, people think, oh, it's comedy. It's so fun. You get to laugh, and that is a big part of it. But there's a lot of pressure and stress involved in making any film.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Somebody.
Well,
somebody
you said it.
Somebody said every film is a miracle, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
we did have so much fun.
So much fun.
Like, it really was like a dream come true for us. I don't know if we'll ever in our lives have an experience like this again. To be just like, and it felt like a real moment. It felt like a moment for all these women. They were just so good and so funny, and their chemistry was just so undeniable. And I don't know if we'll ever really have an experience as honestly. Hashtag blessed as that, you know?
Yeah, it really was fun. And yes, we did have, you know, stressful moments and things that we, like, were trying to figure out.
There's a hurricane
in
the middle of production.
We shot in a house, and so most of it was tented because we shot day for night for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's plenty of things that we have to think about.
Yes, but
at the end of the day,
you don't want to bore your listeners with that.
Yeah, but you look at the monitor, and then, you know, there's Kate McKinnon and Alana Glazer, you know, doing something incredible. It's like, it was really.
I think the listeners would love to know the secrets of how you make day turn to night.
Oh,
and night
really?
Turn to day.
Okay.
We could skip that.
Lucia and Yellow
and Paul Downs, the co-writers, and Lucia, the director of Rough Night, which is in theaters on the 16th, starring Scarlett Johansson, Zoe Kravitz, Kate McKinnon, Jillian Bell, Alana Glazer, and Paul Downs, of course. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More of the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The co-writers and director of Rough Night are in studio with me. Rough Night, of course, the comedy with Scarlett Johansson and a slew of funny people coming out on the 16th. Paul Downs, Lucia, and Yellow in studio tonight. We're having this conversation about making a movie, but we peel it back. I mean, you both met an improv class at UCB. And UCB means a lot to the city of Chicago because they come from Chicago.
That's right.
A group that took the aesthetic that's here and what they learned from Del Close and others and brought it to New York. How much does improv play a role in your lives as artists? I mean, was that just training for you to move on to be filmmakers and actors? Or how much do you continue to use improv in your work?
Quite a bit.
I think all the time.
I mean, I think especially in the writing stage.
Yeah.
Because essentially, like, I mean, we'll do this all the time. If we have a scene, we'll just perform as the characters and just embody them and just start riffing. And if we'll record it on our phones or we'll have a writer's assistant be jotting stuff down. But it's a huge way for us to come up with dialogue.
And there's plenty of, I think, rules, for lack of a better word, that come into play. You know, the rule of three, you know, having things happen three times. It's something that I think if you don't have improv training, you would still probably know. It's something that, you kind of feel. But having it often answers a question for us if we're debating about doing something. It's like, let's definitely do it again.
And
let's definitely do it a third time.
It's also a vocabulary to talk about comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you're talking about game or you're talking about blackout scenes or whatever it is, like, you can use dialogue that comes from the improv world, or you can use terms that make it easy. It's like a shorthand to just talk to other writers.
Yeah, I think we really do employ it every day.
Yeah, I'd say a little bit less on set.
You'll hear a lot of people talk about using improvisation for on-screen stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul, like for being in the movie, you know, use improvisation to change a line or what have you. But rarely is it talked about in being supportive writers. Mm-hmm. You know, and as you just said, I mean, the idea of being able to use those skills to write, I mean, that seems to be something that rarely we hear. Most of the time you're going to think about someone sitting down in front of a computer and saying, okay, here's I'm going to write this script out. But more often with comedians, especially comedians who are in all worlds, this is the way that something gets written.
For sure.
Yeah. And improved. And yeah.
Completely.
And I think that's the thing when you have people who are great improvisers working in the project. It's also when you do a table read, it changes there, you know, and then you're rewriting to their voice. And I think being able to improvise as the characters, once you know the actor, helps you refine a script even more and, you know, make the second draft or 14th draft that much better.
Obviously, being at UCB in New York City and then your work on Broad City as well on Comedy Central, there is a very New York aesthetic to the work. I mean, Broad City is at the epicenter of what, you know, a scene of young improvisers and actors that are this tearing up the whole country. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're a part of that? Do you feel like that you see almost a community, or almost like if you think about indie rock or the New York City comedy style that's
100%,
coming out?
Yeah.
Completely, yeah.
It's very much.
We do live in LA now. I want that to be very clear
yes.
to all listeners.
Okay.
but no, I think there is like a world where it's like, oh, I know all these people from this time when we were all in like this place.
Yeah, it's crazy how it is a community, and it has like created so many performers and writers and producers and people in every walk of the industry.
Yeah.
So,
and we're constantly putting those people in art. I mean, so many even young UCB people are in the movie that are generations below us, but we were able to use them
I mean, we try and give back in the way that Amy Poehler really has for us, because she, as an executive producer of Broad City, you know, was a champion for Lucia directing the pilot and for me being in the show. And, you know, I think it's that kind of a thing, that it really is not only great training, but also it's such a great community. It's a family of people, you know, and I think we feel very connected to that.
Yeah, and we have that in Chicago. I mean, Chicago has been coming through Second City or IO. You have a lot of different improvisers who will become a community when they get to LA or get to New York. I mean, UCB is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. So I think about it. I mean, you know, you went to Duke, right?
Yep.
And where are you from?
I grew up in Western Massachusetts.
Western Massachusetts. So you came to New York City. You said film. Did you come here for comedy or to New York?
Yeah, I came for comedy. It was kind of either go to UCB, do UCB in New York, and a lot of my friends came and did, you know, Second City and IO here in Chicago, because I was on an improv team at Duke. Duke University Improv, DUI. Yeah, really. The names are always just so good. DUI is a pretty good one.
That's actually like legitimately a good one.
Yeah. But I think in that way, you do feel connected to communities, whether it's in Austin or it's in Toronto. Or, you know, when you meet improv people, it does feel like you said, like an indie rock kind of a thing, where you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, you jammed with Bonehead? Yeah, me too, man, you know?
Yeah.
So what's next for you guys? I mean, as we kind of wrap up the conversation, I mean, you're obviously just finished your debut film.
Literally yesterday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you take a while to promote this film and move forward? I mean, are you already like, okay, what's our next project? What are we moving forward on? What are we going to do?
We are writing another movie right now.
Yeah, we've been working on some other things for a while.
It's helpful for us, I think, to have other things to occupy our brain space and jump around to. And it's also exciting, as you're finishing a project, to have another one that you're working on. So we are writing another movie and working on a TV show. And
None of which we have brought out to the world yet. Because we kind of like keeping things as finished as we can, just with us privately, before we kind of like bring it out to the world, just because we feel like it's a stronger package or idea if we really have our minds wrapped around it. So it's still in that kind of incubation stage, but we're getting close.
My last question, just about, you guys met in UCB level 1 years ago. What keeps you together as writing partners and continuing to choose to work on projects, creative projects that will be on the stage and screen in the future?
Well, we're also a couple.
Okay, so, I don't want to say anything, but
wow.
I asked you to please not say that.
We're going to have to edit this out. Okay.
But beyond that, because you could be a couple and choose not to work with each other, but you guys have worked on certain projects and continue to work together as a group, as the digital work that you've done, Broad City, and even onto the films. What is it about each other that keeps you sort of,
deep question, about
chemistry?
I think it's our bodies. I think it's her body. It's my body. But also we make each other laugh. I think that's the thing that, like, at least for me, for whether you're talking about couples or writing partners, I'm like, inspiring each other, making each other laugh,
we genuinely like hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, that's who I want to hang out with.
Sorry. Yeah, but that's true. I think that's the reason.
Who are you apologizing to?
I don't know. Nobody. Just the cynical person who rolled their eyes was like, ew, you know, that person. Oh. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Well, I know.
But yeah, I think we make each other laugh. And also, it's hard when you're together and you're both comedians not to have material just come, you know, just sort of come. And
when we write, we just write to make the other person laugh. I'm not going to get into our process because I know we're wrapping up.
Yeah.
But we write separately. I mean, we think of everything together, but then we actually write drafts separately.
And then we come together and combine them.
And then we combine
them. Which is
good
for us.
We try to make the other person laugh. And so that it really helps keep the voice like very tight, because I'm like, I know how to make him laugh, so that's my audience right now, and it makes it so I'm not thinking about all the other people who might eventually see it. And
I think
gets
that's
you out
the
of
thing.
Your head.
People write for an audience sometimes, and it can be misguided. And when you write for somebody who you think is really smart and funny, and I'm writing for her, and she's writing for me, and I think that is really helpful in our work.
Mm-hmm.
Well said. There you go. Lucia and Yellow and Paul Downs are the co-writers of the movie Rough Night. Lucia is the director, of course. And
Of course. Sure.
The movie comes out on the 16th. Stars Scarlett Johansson, Zoe Kravitz, Kate McKinnon, Jillian Bell, Alana Glazer, Paul as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for spending some time
with
me. I appreciate it. And good luck with the movie.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. Go see it with a bunch of friends.
Yeah. Get lit.
Good to talk with Paul and Lucia. He is one of the he plays Trey on the show Broad City. He's such a great character. If anyone listening out there watches Comedy Central's Broad City, which is I think in its fifth season now or something like that, it's got a new season coming up here this summer. Trey is one. He's so good. He plays Abby's boss at the gym. Abby. Someone threw up in the bathroom. He's a great character. That's good. I mean, it's a good combo. For them to make the transition from writing with friends on Comedy Central show in New York to the big screen to a June 16th launch, which truly now becomes almost like a bridesmaid slot, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like it wasn't there before, but now it seems like, oh, let's go with the comedy. Mm-hmm. Let's go with the sort of not independent, but ensemble comedy in June.
Just a fun summer romp.
that's exactly. Mm-hmm. That should be on the poster.
They use that.
Yeah. I wonder. I mean, this. I'm trying to think of other movies that are coming out this summer that are in that form.
I don't think they make them anymore.
Well, I mean, I guess, are we going to see anything from Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, right? They had Melissa McCarthy usually is due for a summer
something.
Movie. Yeah. Kumail's movie, The Big Sick.
Yeah.
That is great. That's a great movie. I saw that movie because Kumail's going to be on next week or before it comes out, a couple weeks. Amazing. That I honestly will say, I mean, Rough Night is good. Kumail's movie was really good. And I'm looking forward to talking to him, former Chicago stand-up,
who's
a star in Silicon Exciting. Valley and other places. Just so we can have a 20-minute conversation about the birthday loan scene in Portlandia. I don't know if you've ever seen him and Michael O'Brien from Saturday Night Live. The concept of this great Portlandia episode, I think it's maybe even season 1, is that one of Fred Armisen's characters is having a birthday party, and every character in that episode got an invite. So they show them getting the invite, and it's kind of culminates at the party. But Michael O'Brien's character doesn't have enough money for the gift. And so they go to the bank to get a birthday present loan. That's the joke, right? And Kumail Nanjiani is the loan officer. So the questions are hilarious. Like, what is this birthday present for? Like, it's just a really great scene of the Michael O'Brien and the woman, I don't know her name, but and Kumail, and it's really funny. So if we could spend 20 minutes just breaking down that.
I hope so. I hope so.
Great piece of American comedy. We will do it. Speaking of comedy coming up, Andrea Levofson's she's going to be in studio. She is a dope-ass mom. Her web series, Dope-Ass Mom Tips, a series of tutorials, is a widely popular series, and we'll talk with her about it and, of course, her work in that area. She's a speaker. She is a writer. She's a coach. She really sort of focuses on motherhood, which I thought was a great segment to do the week of Father's Day. I really think that we nailed it in the sense that, you know, when we think about pegs, we want to flip it. We could talk about, every show is going to do on Father's Day, and that's barbecue. What are you doing for barbecue? We could do that, but why, and not here on the download, we flip it.
Yeah, I like it.
We just talk motherhood. It was by accident, but let's go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's commit, double down, 100%, hunker down, right?
We can sneak in some grilling tips.
We could do that. We could. What else going on? Coming up after, we'll play The Worst tonight, which I'm excited about, always, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes, for pizza. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of some worsts. And I noticed this last week when I went on Chicago Tonight when I went a week in review. We did that on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
When I was sort of grooming myself,
yeah,
you know, like kind of like just tighten it up the sides,
yeah,
you know,
of course.
Before, you know, mm-hmm. making the beard yeah. kind of look at scraggly but professional.
Right. You're on TV. Got to.
I recognize that my eyebrows have been a long forgotten part of my face. I would think you would assume that you're the same way, that you never think about it. You don't look in the mirror and pluck at eyebrows. But I had one eyebrow hair on my right that was like, it was like Raleigh fingers. Like it was a long hair. And I was like, wow, I'm really not paying attention to this part of my hair, you know? So anyway, I went in there and I like snipped it out of there. I just
yanked
plucked it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when I got to Chicago Tonight Week in Review, they do makeup. It's TV. So you sit down and makeup, and it's always a kind of, I really like the woman who does it. I've known her for a while now. But it's kind of an awkward experience because you're talking while, you know, she's putting makeup on your face. And, yeah, and then she was spending time, like, working on my eyebrows, like, filling them in. And I'm like,
so you didn't really even have to do anything?
No, I should have just let her pluck it out, you know, or kept it in there for, you know, for fullness.
My wife usually will alert me to any sort of monstrosity that is sprouting from my body. At some point she'll, like, we're sitting around last week or something, and she was like, you got to do something about the hair that's coming out of your ear.
Yeah, ear hair is the worst.
And I've never had a problem with it before.
I know. It's called getting old.
And it was I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, there's like a long hair coming out of your ear. Let me like pull it. And I'm like, no. I'll deal with it.
No,
you're
going to cultivate it. It's going to make it part of your look. That's what you're going to do, right?
Made a new thing.
You're like, you're close enough. This could be what gets you back into hipster circles, right? All the kids,
it is a new like handlebar mustache,
yeah,
maybe.
Handlebar mustache, but for your ears. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, so we will talk about the worst being ear hair. 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get Rob's news. Thank you, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll play the worst. I've already got one. Here, Pete, you're going to love this one. And it's really... Okay, this is from one of our regular listeners, 773, who says, I lost a, you know what's the worst? Losing a flip-flop on the bus. And then I had to ask the question, like, what does that mean, right? Were you wearing it?
Mm-hmm.
Did it just slip off the, and the response was, I was getting off at a stop a block from my house, it fell off, and the bus took off. So maybe it was like halfway on the bus, halfway off, but either way, gross.
Yeah.
The worst, right?
And he's down, what, $2?
Could be down.
Flip-flop.
Down $1.99, yeah. I don't even think it's a money issue. I think it's more like your barefoot touched a bus. I wouldn't even wear flip-flops on the bus. Like I'm not even a germaphobe. You know, we were just talking about how I had eyebrows that go as long as, you know, miles and miles. I'm not that kind of guy who's like really super into, you know, or afraid of germs and hygiene, all that kind of stuff. But man, barefoot on the bus, no, ain't doing it. I'm giving up at that point. That'd be give up time. So now you know. All right, that's coming up at 10 o'clock. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. Well, my next guest tonight is a dope ass mom. Andrea Levoff is a former stand-up comedian who, after children, created a popular web series, Dope Ass Mom Tips, a series of tutorials on how to get your kids to bed, how to potty train, how to get your kids to stop acting like jerks. The short answer, wine, right? They're hilarious. Levoff has turned her series into an empire. The writer, speaker, and coach has gone way past jokes on YouTube to creating a Dope Ass Mom Summit, which is a biannual event that helps moms give their kids a happier, calmer, and overall doper version of themselves. Andrea Levoff lives in Chicago with her family, and she is in studio tonight. Andrea, thanks for coming in. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
I enjoy the series. I love the concept that, I mean, I wanted to play some of them tonight. A lot of the jokes are in the visuals, which is good. Like I was playing it today,
I'm like,
this will be great on the radio, or not. But but check them out. Dope Ass Mom, you can find it on YouTube, that kind of stuff. Where's this idea come from? Talk a little bit about the series and how you got to it.
Sure.
And get up on that microphone, too.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So, well, I, like any parent, I went on the internet and I was looking for advice. You know, kids, it's funny because I think, like, the most natural things that we do as humans, like, kids find it the hardest to do, like, going to bed, going to the bathroom, eating. It's like all these things that we think should just come so naturally just happen to have to be taught. And so I was looking for advice, and I kept hearing the same thing, like, okay, read a book and, you know, speak in a soft tone and all these things that I was doing anyway and just failing at miserably. So I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I created a parody or sort of half advice on this is what we're told to do and this is what we're doing, but this is what's really happening.
I think that's the beauty of it too, and why I thought, you know, looking at this stuff, that found it hilarious, is that there is this cottage industry of parenting advice. We see it on mommy blogs and a whole network of people who are doling out advice on how to be good parents.
Right.
And most of the time it's sort of, no pun intended, but sort of produced with kid gloves. And exactly. What I liked about it was the fact that, yeah, wine plays a big part in...
Well, right. And sometimes people call me a parent coach. And I'm like, no. I'm not a parent coach. Like, I am not going to give you great advice on how to parent, but I can give you advice on how to be with yourself while you're being a parent.
You know, for you, doing a parody and essentially, you know, kind of making fun at the parental tips that you find on YouTube, I would assume a lot of people stumble upon your stuff and they're like, Oh my, they don't recognize it's a parody. How do you deal with the fact that you're representing parenting and motherhood, but doing it in a way that may not be suitable to some viewers?
I say that they're probably just not my audience. Also, I had a single guy friend of mine tell me that he loved this character that I was playing on the show. He's like, I love this, like, it's just sort of self-absorbed woman you're playing. And I'm like, that was me, dude.
There's no character.
Not really
this
playing
real
a character there. So, you know, just it's funny to see people that don't have kids that also think it's funny, but maybe don't get it 100%.
Right. You know, for you, you've been able to make a transition, the idea of doing this series, which has been popular and it's gone viral, to really taking the tenets of this and creating, like I said, the Dope-Ass Mom Summit and being a speaker and a coach. Talk about the transition of making jokes online to really sort of having more... of an empire around it.
Well, I started originally, you know, with my background in stand-up and doing stand-up in the city and open mics and it just being like terrible timing for a mom. And so that's when I started doing the videos. But then I started to realize there's a real need for this in motherhood. And mothers, you know, we need a release and we need to know that we're not alone in this plight. And that we, you know, feel like, okay, I'm not the only one effing it up, right? So it's a big release. And the summit is sort of about just coming together and supporting each other and being with each other and laughing and really saying, I do this. Do you do that? Yeah, I do that. It's sort of like a community that's forming.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you like that role? How do you like being the center of that role where people come up and say, and they're insecure or they want to talk about the things that they're regretting or that they don't think they're doing well, and you have to be the person who says it's okay?
I mean, I like it. I like the role that I've taken on. I mean, I like to see people feeling empowered and feeling like they remember, you know, what they in motherhood. It's so easy to get lost in our kids' lives and to get lost in everything that's happening around us. So I love it when people realize that they have a purpose and they have something to give and something to share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrea Levoff is my guest tonight. Let's talk a little bit about the presentation that you do and talk about the issues that are in that presentation as we talk about motherhood and her series, which you can find on YouTube, Dope Ass Mom Tips. Really, I mean, I find this a lot in the interviews and the things that you've done and even the presentation points. I haven't seen the presentation, but the concept that where motherhood kind of goes awry is when you try to be everything to everyone. This concept of, you know, that you have to be there to be not just a mother, but a everything about this idea of being everything. Talk about that.
Right. I mean, we all know that mother. We all maybe have that mother or the grandmother that was just everything for everybody. The martyr, you know, just don't worry about me. I'll sit here in the dark kind of person. And it's just not realistic. And it just breeds resentment. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that as a mom. Nobody, like, my kids will be happier when I'm fulfilled and when I'm living my purpose. And I feel like it's not selfish. It's actually selfless to give my kids that. So I think whenever I see someone trying to do everything for everybody. I'm like, just relax. You know, you're doing the best that you can. And I don't, it's an important message, I think.
Yeah. I mean, how often do you run across moms that don't necessarily know that they're doing that?
I mean, all the time.
That's part of it, is being
all the time.
Aware,
I mean, that's
it,
how
right?
I was when I first started. And that's why I think I went through this journey and then felt the need to share it with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. The other is your relationship with the family. I mean, the idea that, you know, not only are you a caretaker and you're at the center of a family, but you also you have needs and need to be heard. So talk about communication, because that's a big part of the presentation as well.
Communication. So it's important, you know, there's a book called Nonviolent Communication that I love. And it's really about just saying what you're feeling instead of saying, you're making me feel this way. You have a tendency to just want to like be like, and, you know, scream at your kids and be like, you're making me crazy, you know, but it's really, they're not. They're kind of just triggering something inside of you that's making you feel crazy. So it's like when you can realize that they're kind of there as little button pushers for a reason, and they sort of help uncover our unresolved issues that really they didn't create. And it takes a little bit of the edge off, because then you can sort of say, okay, it's not an emergency in this moment. I don't have to have a teachable moment right now all the time. And it sort of just takes the edge off that those moments where you feel like this needs to be solved right now.
For you, I mean, as a mom, how did you go from, you know, all of these things that you talk about in the presentation that you actually were involved? You were everything to everyone. You had communication issues. How do you make that transition to being someone different?
Well, that's when I went back to get my master's degree. My daughter was about one, and I enlisted the help of a life coach. I was feeling very, you know, I was 28 and none of my friends had kids. And I feel like, you know, my one friend was Kourtney Kardashian, you know, like she was like the one other person that I knew was pregnant. Like all of my other friends were like, I mean, 28 in the city is like teen mom, yeah. You know, like it was young. And so I didn't really have anyone to talk to or have anyone that, you know, to tell me what was going on, what was what. So I went back and I slowly found my way, and I went back to get my master's degree and really started to focus on myself and realized that while I didn't have influence over everything that was happening in my house and with my family, like I did have influence over what was happening with me. And I had a choice, and I had that time in between when something happens and you respond, it's like you have that space. And I had that option to make a choice. Sometimes I don't make the right choice, but at least I know I have it, right?
Right. I mean, but that's not, I mean, I think that, you know, that's obviously plays a big role in parenting. But it's also when you think about just life and who we are as human beings, I mean, you want to make as much space between whatever the thing that's messing with your emotions.
Yes.
To be able to make a choice. You may make the wrong choice.
Exactly. There are many times where like, I see that I have a choice, but I still am going to blame you for spilling that water.
How many times are you in a situation with your kids or you hear this from other mothers where, the idea being that the lessons that you're learning or you're teaching with your children are really lessons that are life lessons for us as adults?
Oh, all the time. I mean, almost every, I could probably say every single one, you know?
I mean, is that something that you, in your teachings, I mean, do you have to really drill that home to people that it's not really about your kids, it's about you?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's not just with kids, right? It's with anything in life. It's with whatever. I think motherhood was just my spiritual path, and it's not everybody's. It just happened to be what sort of put me on the way to that realization.
You have an interesting relationship with spirituality. It was a big part of your master's program.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it seems to be something that has led you to the idea of being the dope ass mom.
Right.
Talk about that. Talk about, you know, how spirituality has played a role in helping you with the relationship, not only with yourself, but with your kids.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, first of all, I think it's funny that you say spirituality and dope ass mom in the same sentence. But, you know, for me, spirituality, a lot of it was so cheesy and it just didn't really resonate with me. So when I could put that dope ass mom name on it, it really made sense to me. It's like to be a dope ass mom is to recognize that spirituality is motherhood is a path of spirituality. And it really helped me to form a better relationship with myself. I mean, I think that's really, really right. About, you know, to have that that relationship with myself, that self-love, that self-care, that way that I relate to myself so that I can relate to others, my kids included, in a more healthy, clearer way.
I mean, that's something that's not afforded to everybody in the sense that they're not going to go and get higher education on spirituality or in psychology, things like that.
Right.
So in your teachings and you know, your seminars at the summit, I mean, what's the shorthand of that? Like to say that, you know, I mean, I know self-care is a concept and that might be what it is, but the idea that if you're not going to have this long journey of spirituality to get to the point where you're like, I need to take care of myself, how do you get through to people to say that this is an important thing for them?
So that's where I use the kids, because I think everybody wants to be, if you approach a mom that's not really sure about that path or about that way, and you say, well, do it for yourself. I don't know, that's a lot of time and that's a lot of effort and I should really be spending it on my kids. But if you say, look, your kids need you. Your kids need the best version of you. They deserve the best version of you. So maybe do it for them. Mm-hmm. I think that's an end for some people.
All right. The last thing we talk about is also you talk about in the summit, which is silencing your inner critic. And I think we kind of touched on this a bit, but the idea of insecurity and whether or not you're making the right decisions as a parent. And this could be mothers and fathers and everyone in between, this concept that I think has nagged just human beings for all time, of whether or not you are parenting in the right way or that you're doing everything you possibly can to give your kin the opportunities that they deserve.
Right. So you're talking about silencing that or like mm-hmm. I tell a story in the summit about a time where I'm in the grocery store with my daughter and she has this epic meltdown and the situation is horrible, right? Like she's doing that thing where like the kids like straighten their bodies up and you can't get them in the cart, you know, they're just locked up and she's throwing a fit and there's like a line a mile long behind me and I couldn't find my wallet. And I got out to the car and I just started crying and it was a terrible, uncomfortable situation and everyone was staring at me. But when I checked in to hear what I was saying to myself, it was way worse than what was actually happening in reality, right? Like it was like, you're a terrible mom and, it, you know, if you're a better parent, this wouldn't have happened. And it was just all this chatter. And I was like, wait, no, that's not necessarily true, you know? So a lot of times I think we tell ourselves stuff that aren't really even true. You know, it's like first check in and be like, is this true? I don't, you know, so I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I wonder about that because I think that, you know, I think about the comedy, the movie that came out not too long ago, Bad Moms with Mila Kunis. And I remember the concept, it was a very similar concept, this idea of four or five moms that just were going to have self-care and they're going to change things up. But there was some backlash to the concept of what's a bad mom or the concept of, you know, well, this obviously they were playing for jokes and things like that.
Right.
But this concept of good mom versus bad mom and where do you draw the line and what you know, when we talk about motherhood, the concept of how can you be one and not the other? And I guess for me, it's like and what I'm learning from you and from the research of going into this is that it's kind of a dual personality in the way that that's just life. That's who we are. We make good choices and bad choices. And sometimes we're the good mom, sometimes we're the bad mom, but you can't judge and you can't have the bad mom judge the good mom all the time.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny because I watch Bad Moms. And I was like, that's like a Tuesday for me. Like, that's not a bad, is this a bad mom? But I think the most important thing is like, you know, we're all doing the best that we can, period. You might look at someone and say, well, that's a really bad mom, but she really is doing the best that she can. And I'm doing the best that I can. And you're doing the best that you can. And I think that's where I rest in peace.
What's next for you? I mean, when you think about, you know, the web series that you've done and now the summits, I mean, are you going full tilt into this as a full-time sort of dope ass mom where
this
is your business? This is going to be, even when your kids are grown and gone, are you still going to be the dope ass mom who continues to give life lessons?
I hope so. I mean, that's what I see. I don't know exactly what's in store for me, but that's definitely my vision. I'm doing a Dope Ass Mom Summit in Houston in August, so that's really exciting. And I continue to have private clients, which is my favorite. So, yeah.
All right. Andrea Levoff is the woman behind Dope Ass Mom Tips. She is the Dope Ass Mom. She's also doing the Dope Ass Mom Summit in Texas this summer, and will be another one coming up here in Chicago, I'm sure. We just missed it. It was in April. It's just like me. That's actually it's classic me, where I'm like, oh, this would be fun to talk about after the fact. Andrea, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. We'd love to have you come back.
So
yeah, thank you.
I'm not going to lie to you, Pete, a 352 doesn't really work for me, you know, on the HD CLTV. I'm going to have to check it out now. All the 300 channels on my Xfinity, I don't get. Like, this is my package. Like, every time I'm, oh, what's this one? No, I don't get it.
Really?
I get the 300 at the top, which is HBO, but, like, after that, I'm not.
No, nothing? No. Hmm.
I feel like the 300 is where you'll find, like, the Big Ten Network or, like, MLB Network and things like that. But this gives me a reason to go into 300s now.
Yeah, you got to get into 300s. That's
good stuff. Yeah, I feel like it's definitely like a level of affluence. If the channels start coming into 300s, I've made it.
Mm-hmm.
400s, forget about it.
Something goes on, something happens, you know you're having some people over.
Yeah, now it's like, hey, you guys want to watch TV? Anything in the 400s?
Yeah. Serious? And you kind of scroll, you know, like when you went to your, like, aunt's house or something.
Right.
And she only had up to channel 12.
Yeah, that's where I think I'm going. That's the next move for me. But, yeah, I'm excited. Well, now I have a reason to go to the 300s. All right. All right, coming up, we will have the worst, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Like I said, coming up, 10 o'clock, the worst, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Who wants a pizza? You lost a flip-flop on the bus? That could be the winner already. It's just so disturbing. Although the explanation seems like it may have been like the foot came off. Like, she was leaving, and then the flip-flop stayed on the bus. She was outside of the bus. That's my guess. That's what it sounded like, right? So,
to my understanding, that's what
you're just getting sidewalk, asphalt,
mm-hmm.
barefoot. But your foot never actually...
It's not on the bus.
Barefoot and didn't hit that graded
mm-hmm.
bus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not as the worst as it would be if your foot touched that. That's it. I just don't even, I'm at the point where I'm like, I just don't know why you'd even go flip-flops on the bus. Like, I know it's hot out, but I'd be like, I'm getting the Crocs.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about the bus. I mean, I do know what it's about the bus. But, yeah, it's just, there's... I feel like my life riding the CTA bus has helped me eliminate allergies. Like, I think at a certain point, my immune system got real tough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just like, all right, so your life, we're just going to be in this muck. Okay, well, we'll just adjust. We'll evolve. I'm like a critter in the swamp. You know, like, anyone else is down there, you know, you'll get gangrene. But me, I'm like, nah, that's, I live for it.
Come down to the red line about 1 a.m. and see the dregs that are lurking.
You, yeah.
It's a whole new... Yeah.
I guess it works for you and I, because in the way that, you know, we really can't afford to be sick. We got to fight through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a job. We don't have a job here at WGN where we're like, well, I'm going to call in today.
No.
So, yeah, we have to toughen it up.
Show must go on.
So I always think of you when you're riding the red line at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, well, that's good for Pete. It's toughening him up.
Yep.
That's what I think. This, you know what? This is good for Pete. That's what I say. I say out loud when I have my private, personal, mani-pedi people taking care of me. And I'm like, it's good for Pete. He takes the train at all hours of the night. Toughens him up. Puts, what they say, put right skin on the bones?
Hair on your chest?
Hair on the chest. Rice on the bones. Isn't there a rice reference?
Mm-hmm.
Sticks to your bones? Yeah. Sticks to your bones!
I'm doing a new thing on the train now where I get on the very first car, which is kind of a tactical error because if it's all messed up,
Yeah, what do you do?
You have to run back to the second car. But anyway, it's the closest one to my exit.
Okay.
So, save me, 30 seconds.
Right.
And I get off, and I say thank you and good night to the train conductor who's looking out, down the...
He keeps an eye for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. You're so polite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just added that into my repertoire.
Even when I have my headphones blaring and I get up to the front of the bus, I give him a little wink and a nod. Thank you for the ride.
Good job, yeah.
Good job.
Got us here safely.
Right. Yeah. There you go. So this this past weekend, I think I talked about it a little bit on the show, but I was in charge of my son's history project. It was the big history fair. And they had a thesis and everything involved. Now, when I say I was in charge, I'm really the chaperone of the history project. And we're in a situation where, as he gets older in fourth grade, you have to start doing this yourself. When there's a history project in second grade, the kid's not doing it. You know what I mean? You're doing pretty much and you're hoping that
guiding a little bit.
Yeah, you're hoping they pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're at the stage now in fourth grade where you're like, these are your response. This is your responsibility to glue stick this stuff to a board.
Yeah, hands right? off. It's like the Pinewood Derby. You know, we can't get the fastest car. Right.
But, and because Andrea was on the show and she talked about, the inner critic and honesty in parenting, I have a hard time letting that go. I get the concept of, the struggle. My son does a good job, and I think I can, parents listening right now will relate. He does a good job of making it a struggle. And so it makes it easy for you to go, I'll do it.
Oh.
He's becoming a manipulator in the sense that he's like,
I know dad will take care of this.
If I just grind it out, if I grind it out with an extra huff and an extra, or I don't know, or feign, ignorance, even though we went over it three or four times, that he'll get away with it. And my wife is like, he's going to get away with it. I'm like, I know. And I feel like at the end of it, I'm like, well, I find myself more times than not actually being the guy who puts the glue stick on the back of a pitcher. Or, for instance, we went to Second City. So here's what the thesis was. It's his thesis. I like it. We brainstormed and he came up with it. There would be no Saturday Night Live if it weren't for Second City in Chicago. Right? It's a good history project. It was about Chicago and had to be important. I figure that's important for any town.
It's great.
And he then has to prove that thesis in the with the trifold.
Mm-hmm.
So we go over to Michael's. Right.
Yeah.
We go to Michael's. I'm the one going, I'm buying a bunch of garbage, like letters, glitter mm-hmm. and letters and glue. And I also bought this thing that I'm sure every parent has done this too. It's like some accessory to the trifold that you put on it, and you could play sound by hitting a button. Right, you could play sound, and it's like battery powered. So I'm like, oh great! I had this grandiose idea that I would put it and you stick it to the board and it works, And I would what I would do is pull up YouTube and get Chevy Chase going live from New York at Saturday Night Live, or get a Second City like Welcome to the Second City in Chicago.
That's great. That's a perfect thing to get for.
Kill it, kill it.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
Oh, what do you mean?
I think the battery was dead. I spent 15-20 minutes fidgeting with it and trying to figure it out, and I'm like, of course it is. It was an $8 add-on at Michael's in the aisle 14. It's like, the radio a lot. And I'm like,
oh man, see, but this is disappointing because now you got me excited about the sound.
Right. And then there was another thing I bought. I bought two things that were useless. The second thing that I bought were lights, like marquee lights. That's also part of the trifold.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe you could put it around the Second City SNL like thesis or a picture that's in the middle. I didn't do it because the minute I started to look at it and start to see how I was going to puncture holes in the trifold to make it, I thought to the experience I had 15 minutes before where it didn't work. And I'm like, these batteries, everything's going to die in 5 minutes and this is going to look bad. And then on top of it, I'm like, and then do I break the deal? Why am I doing this?
Yeah, how much are you supposed to be doing?
That's what I'm saying.
The store. Can you? Does he have any input into what you're going to get at the store?
Yeah, he doesn't care though. He's off looking at didgeridoos and, you know, and dinosaurs and things like that. So I'm sitting there going, well, this is a gold letter. And it's red. Oh, red letters.
You can't say that, you know, like, this is important that you do this yourself. This is your project.
Yeah, you do that. You do that.
And they,
they just get it. And to be fair, I mean, the writing, he did the writing. He typed it in and he put all the stuff together. It's really when you get down to the puzzle of the trifold, like where the picture's going to go and where this is going to, where this, all that kind of stuff where you're like, you know, you find yourself being, you know, overly parenting where you're like, no, there, you know, glue stick it, glue stick it. But, and the good news is, and it was great when I got, you know, I went and saw the history fair. They had it during the class during the day and I could go. This was last week. And I was like, this is great. You did a great job. You did a really good job. And he would stand there and he's such an actor. He'd stand there with his hands and his, you know, in position where he's just like, hi, would you like to know what the Second City impact had on Saturday Night Live? In 1959, and he would do the whole thing. And
speech ready to go?
But it was like he added a dollop of innocence to it. You know, like he just, you know, I'll be cute. If I'm cute, then you won't care what I'm saying. Like, I watch it. I'm just a dad who's just like, all right, not going to. We get it. We get what you're doing here. But I'll come back and I'll tell the story of our visit to Second City. Because I went to Second City with him over the weekend to say, to collect some stuff, see if I can get some swag. We'll pick it up. Stay with us. Do you think that Harvey ad-libbed that line? He's like, there's no reason for your family to feud. That's what he said on that. Or you think that was scripted? I could see Harvey being like, I got one. Let me try something else. So, quick programming update. Pete and I are off tomorrow night. I forgot to tell you. We were going to tell you earlier in the show, but we are off tomorrow. Brian Noonan is in. It'd be fun to have Brian here. He's awesome. I'm the reason is because I'm going to see my son's play. He's in the play. We talked about it. I spent all weekend working on it. He is Danny Zuko in Greece.
And they're running this kid ragged.
They are. Yeah, I know.
Science or history fair, project. Yep.
Well, the history fair is over, so the play is all that's really left. I mean, my son goes to Chicago schools. If you're listening to this in the suburbs, you feel like you're ready for your kids to go back to school. Mm-hmm. The kids in Chicago are still in school for another week, which is usually means, have you guys seen Jumanji? Like, that's usually what, I mean, they're already starting the graduations for kindergarten and all that. So yeah, so tomorrow he's in play, and it's funny because I really feel like I'm trying to have a zen approach to it because it's fourth grade elementary school play.
Yeah.
It's usually not the case. Meaning you don't get plays until they're in later grades, maybe high school. Mm-hmm. But the idea of fourth grade, this is just an add-on. And then you realize that, you know, there's a reason why they're fourth graders and they're going to put on a play and it's kind of excruciating to watch. but I'm very excited to have been a part of watching the practice and the rehearsal. And this weekend we were practicing, and I was trying to explain blocking. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like this is my sports. I've talked about this before that my son's not really in the sports, so I haven't had a chance to be a little league coach. But like improv or acting, yeah, that's my time. I might as well, you know, get a beer in my hand and
get your knowledge.
Get my windbreaker on,
mm-hmm.
my lawn chair. Be like, stage right, make yourself heard. Come on now. So anyway, that's tomorrow, and I'll have a full report on it. It's funny because it's very difficult to put a play, and this is going to be a long play. But he's Danny Zuko. And the teacher's done a good job of like sanitizing the story because the story's not.
Yeah, there's some songs are a little racy.
Yeah, lousy with virginity. Mm-hmm. They don't say that. I think they're lousy with Twinkies, you know, or something like that. But yeah, he sings these songs, so it's really fun to watch and practice. But
do you go full like dad and video and everything?
Yeah, that's going to be a big part of tomorrow. But it's really funny too because he was huffing and puffing because I was like, do it again. You know, I was like with sports, taking the joy right out of it. Like, I don't feel it. I feel like the joy is in the hardship, like overcoming adversity. That's the kind of dad that I am. The idea that, like, ah, oh, you know what? If you practice this 30,000 times and you put it up on stage and it's perfect, you're going to feel good. So do it again.
I think, though, I mean, again, and just as it is with sports and stuff, it's a fine line. But when you know, you talk to a champion, when you talk to, the guys on the Warriors, Kevin Durant.
Practice.
He's not going to say, like, yeah, I didn't really feel like playing. My dad didn't really push me either. Yeah, so right. I just,
And you want to push. There's a fine line. You don't want to be pushed where, your kid crumples down into a ball and starts crying.
Not all the time.
Not all the time. But act two for sure. But, like, I was so fun, man. It was just so fun. To say, now what Danny feels here, he's like in love, but he's like also telling his buddies, like, hey, oh, they're judging me. It's peer pressure. Oh, that's cool, babe. You know, I went into my Travolta. Like, we watched the movie Grease on Saturday, and I was like stopping it. And I'm like, you see what he's doing here? You see how he's looking back on what? He's fronting. And Sandy can't understand. Yeah. Sandy's like, Danny? And he's fronting. He's trying to make it playing cool. What? So what?
Is he doing like a voice?
No, and it's funny. He does have a voice. It's funny. Like, there's a line where it's like, Danny, Sandy. And then the next line, he's like, oh, I mean, what's going on, babe? Or something like that. And he drops into this weird kind of mumble. He's like, hey, what's up? What's going on with you? And I'm like, what is that? And he's got a whole like kind of. Way that his posture changes, and I'm like, no, just it's live stage in a gymnasium. Shout those lines. No one's gonna hear you if you go deep. Like, what's up with you, man? And we're not on film for this one. We're not mic'd under the shirt. Like, we're gonna need you to look left. I told him, look left, look right, and they go, I don't know what's up with you, or just the idea of like. She had to show a change. You can't. The voice is not the only thing to change.
Oh, but you're a good teacher.
Thank you, buddy. Finally, somebody recognized. So, just a quick wrap on the Second City story. I went to Second City for to get swag. Like, I went there to see if I can get stickers,
anything
whatever
that they have.
And I went up to the box office, and I shouldn't even be telling this because I know Second City will get mad at me. But I go up there and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for my son's doing a report. You got anything back there? It's just totally my dad. Just like, hey, you can help us out. Chicago. And the guy goes like, I don't know. I got the sticker. And it was like a round sticker. It said Second City. And I'm like, yeah, that's the work. He's like, $2.
He's charging you for it?
And I'm like, what do you mean? Sticker is $2? That's on your menu next to the Long Island iced tea? That a sticker is $2?
And it's not in an area where they're selling anything.
No, it's in the box office. So it's like, yeah, it's in the back. So I'm like, well... I just put it on the artistic director's tab. That's what I said. Say I owe him one. Tell him Justin owes him one. Because when I walk into Second City, because I've been there so often in my career, I feel like I own the place, and I get mad if you don't recognize that. Like, that's an alumni kind of thing. And I'm not an alumni. I've never been on the stages there, but I just spent a lot of time in the building. I knew a lot of people. But every time I walk in, I'm like, I feel like people need to recognize that I took classes here 25, 30 years ago. I did shows on these stages. I've been in the ETC. I've been there plenty of times. You don't recognize that? Come on. I'm so insufferable. So yeah, he charged me. And then I don't have any cash.
One sticker for $2.
I don't have any cash. He goes, well, we take credit cards. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to lose it. My son's here. I'm going to lose it. And so then I go, all right, give me a couple of those stickers so at least it's a higher number. And he walks around, he comes around, he goes, I think we discontinued these because this is the only one we have. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, so $2.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, have we lost all sense of decency? I know I'm getting a freebie, I guess, but it's not even on the menu.
He's got somebody to account for at the end of the night.
His manager,
$2 short.
It's like, hey, guys, did you guys see that round Second City sticker? Yeah, I sold it. Good job, Trace. You're the kind of sales guy Second City needs. All right, we'll take a break. Come back and play the worst here on the download. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. We'll pay attention to that story out of London, of course. 312-981-7200. It's time to play the worst here. Do every Tuesday night. This is where we complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. I mean, it's a really simple concept. In studio tonight, to be our judges, two comedians, Sarah Albritton, who is a regular on the Downloads the Worst. Good to see you, Sarah.
Good to see you, too.
And a newbie, Catherine Pavs Pavanelli.
Hi.
Good to see you. All right. You guys are the writers of Super Narcoleptic Girl, the web series that's coming out here in July. Superwebseries.com is the site. This is something, Sarah, that's near and dear to your heart because we've talked about this on the show before. You are a narcoleptic, which is crazy to think about.
Yes.
And we don't know much about it, but you wear it well.
Well, they've got lots of pills for it, so that helps. I have narcolepsy. It's a good, I'm very good humored about it, so I feel like it's good to bring awareness in a realistic way, so it's kind of a fun way.
And it seems to be one of these ailments that, you know, comics love to riff on because it's sort of the idea that you could fall asleep at any moment.
It's a bit more complex than that, which is why we want to do a web series where I'm actually involved in writing it so I don't fall asleep in my soup, which would be unrealistic, but like it happens at more realistic times.
There you go. Like bedtime.
Yeah. Well, sure. Well, much more often than just bedtime.
Yeah,
but like,
right.
Like falling asleep on the train, in a car, basically any moving vehicle.
I have been dying to write the sketch about you falling asleep in the car, but I'm scared people might get scared that narcoleptics actually fall asleep in the car, and I don't want to do that to you or your community.
You don't want my license to be taken away?
Not really, no.
Well, you guys are putting together a fundraising campaign for this at the Indiegogo page. You can get all that stuff at superwebseries.com. All right, we're playing the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. Let's start it off like we start off every week with Mr. Pete Zimmerman. Pete!
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you're sitting down to watch a program Sunday afternoon and you grab a new bag of chips and you try to open the bag and it tears open.
Yeah, right.
And all the chips fall.
That's the worst.
And I want to find out a way to open bags of chips.
Well, I will tell you that as someone who has fallen in love with the kettle chips, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that bag is a chip. That's a very hard bag to open.
Yes.
That I found myself just really practicing patience. Like I will, it becomes like you have to actually unwrap the chips. You have to think about it like it's a different product. I think a lot of it is just a paradigm shift for you, Pete.
To rethink, yeah, no,
rethink
I just,
chips.
I get in there and I just, yeah. I'm grabbing. And I don't even like the one, I don't like the bags, like the resealable bags,
right.
Or whatever, because
right.
You could never open those properly either.
Yeah,
I think bag technology
has a long way to
go. Needs to change in 2017.
All right, there you go. Bag technology, the worst. Oh, Pete Zimmerman. All right, let's kick it off. Sarah, what do you got for the worst?
Oh gosh. Well, I think the worst is when you're like feeling like, oh yeah, I look pretty good for my age, and then you wake up one morning with a big crick in your neck, and you're like, I feel old, because that's what happened to me this morning, and now it hurts to turn my neck.
Oh, that is the worst.
Yes,
and it's gonna. You're not old.
I'm not old at all.
You're gonna get to my age, and that's gonna happen every third day.
Well, oh no. Oh.
Yeah.
Eh.
I know. Yeah. It's like when you get to the point where you're like, it's a good back day. That's just not a good way to live your life.
It's just the first time that happened to me, and I call my mom. I'm like, I'm old.
That's the first thing you do. I love it. All right, Catherine, what do you got for the worst?
Oh, God. Okay, so I think the worst is when you're on your morning commute to work, and there's someone clipping their toenails on public transit.
That?
Oh, apparently... natives.
People.
And the toenail hits you in the face.
No.
Ew,
what are you talking about?
Disgusting.
What did you do?
What did I do? You don't want to know what I did. I'm not allowed to say
out?
It. I'm not allowed to say it on the radio.
Did you scream and profanity and do the whole bit? Or did you just like freeze?
I might have farted in that person's face.
Oh, my God. Come on. Tit for tat at that point,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they started it.
Yeah, right. 312-981-7200. All right, let's go to the lines. Let's go to Adam. Adam, what's the worst, bud?
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just telling your guy there that, yeah, I had about, you know, when you get a root canal and you get, the you know, the crown put on,
yeah,
you know, after
right.
they drill down. And I got about 4 crowns put on about 12 years ago, within about a year and a half period or so. And they seem to be, like, sequentially, like, on the dot from when they got put in, like, coming out.
Oh, no.
And the worst feeling in the world is when you're – and it's never at a convenient time. It's always when you're chewing on something, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever you're, like, you know, you'll be chewing, and then all of a sudden you'll crunch down on one of your crowns that are hard as a rock. And it's just the crumbling, you know, just that, you know, I cracked one of my other teeth, so I'd have another, like – root canal to have another one put in, you know. So yeah. So, but I've had it happen about 3 times.
Oh, that's terrible,
man. 3 different crowns.
That's the worst. That's the worst that none of us can understand. I mean, I have crown problems too, but not like that. That's have you ever had that situation where you've crunched down on bread or something hard and your tooth has fallen apart? No.
Mm-mm. No. No, it has not. Oh,
this guy has out here. See, that's another thing when you get older. That's going to happen too. All right, let's get one more in before we go to the break. Let's go to Jasmine. Hey, Jasmine, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Jasmine, are you out of school or are you still in school?
The last official day is on Tuesday, but finals end this week. So I'm after Friday, I'm not going to go anymore.
Oh, okay, there you go. That's nice.
but I have something for
what do you
the
got
worst,
for the worst?
And it's been happening like the last 2 weeks or so. The worst is people at my school that think it's fun to pull the fire alarm.
Oh, that's the worst. Does everyone have to go outside then?
Yeah, and the last time it happened, we missed pretty much all of 6th period. Like, the fire alarm was pulled as I was going to the locker room to change from gym. And so, thankfully, I was, you know, still in my uniform, so I didn't have to deal with anything embarrassing. But we missed, like, it, 6th period, it goes from, like, 12 to, like, 12:55. And when we got to go back inside, it was 12:40. So we missed pretty much all of class. All of class.
You'll look back on that and say, okay, well, maybe
you know,
it's okay to miss 6th period
once
in a while.
When they pull the fire alarm at school and it's not a fire, it caught, you know, the school gets fined for it. The student gets in trouble. It's just, it's not
right.
Yeah,
it's no good. All right. Thanks, Jasmine. That's a good one.
Hope you guys have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Bye.
She's a good point. But at the same time, I feel she's such a responsible citizen. She calls in a lot. But she's such a responsible citizen that she's worried about the cost and the fine that goes to the school.
I was sweet, but I was definitely not that responsible when I was her age.
No.
I would take that. I would take 6th period and be like, great.
I would have been the person pulling the fire alarm. What are you talking about?
Look at you, danger. All right, in studio, Catherine Bavanelli, Sarah Albert, and we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the worst. Stay with us. Sarah Albritton, Catherine Pavanelli in studio. Tonight, they are the writers of Super Narcoleptic Girl. You can find out all the information at superwebseries.com, including the Indiegogo page to help fund. They're going to start shooting in July. They are the judges tonight on The Worst, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, what's the worst, Glenn?
Evening. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Yeah, my worst is your kid's version of ancient history is what you did as a child.
Yeah. when they're talking about like tapes and 8-tracks and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Or reel to reel. You only have 3 channels? No.
Yeah. Well, Glenn,
we both
realized that that's ancient history. You just have to accept it at a certain point because it is.
I know.
You know, I was actually, when I was at TTW for the weekend review, I looked through the window and they had an engineering shop in the basement and they had a reel-to-reel video machine in there. And I said, and I was with the intern. The intern was like kind of ushering us through to the studio. And I stopped and I said, wow, look at that thing. That's amazing to see that thing. And she's like, I don't know what that is. Like, it was just like, I was like, all right. And it's not even that old technology because it's TTW. But anyway, thanks, Glenn.
Thank you. Have a nice evening.
You too. All right. We got a ton of texts here. That's going to be fun. 312-981-7200. 312 says, the worst is sheets in the window for curtains.
Yeah, if I went home with a guy and he had sheets in the window for curtains, I'd maybe like, I don't know. Not really an adult thing.
Yeah, right? I feel like that's
That says like college.
That says college.
Yeah.
It's a college thing.
Or they were being really resourceful.
Yeah. Or efficient. Right.
Yes.
Like I remember when I lived in an apartment and we wanted to keep the heat in one room.
Right.
You would do that kind of stuff. And you
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. that was, again, that was college. So I think I'm proving your point.
You could get away with things in college, like having a mattress with no, like, bed spring and stuff. You can get away with that kind of stuff.
Right.
But after college, it's kind of like,
Stop judging me, Sarah. I see you looking at me.
All right. 832 says, you know what's the worst? Cigar smoke. Oh, interesting. Not a big cigar smoke. Super offensive smelling, much worse than cigarettes or even marijuana.
I don't find marijuana offensive at all.
Well, the smell of the smoke for a cigar smoke. Do you agree? Do you think that's the worst?
I mean, I think that does stay.
He's
a
got
bit.
A couple of the guys.
There's
out
a guy smoking
here.
Outside.
Are you smoking a cigar?
What are you smoking there, huh?
See? Well, what do you guys think? I mean, do you find that smoke offensive?
Not really, because I like them, so that's... I am the worst.
Cigar smoke kind of bugs me a little bit, like, because that lingers a little bit, but cigarette smoke is probably the worst, I'd say.
I would say cigarettes are worse. Yeah, yeah. Same.
Like, yeah.
All right, let's move on. 815, the worst is waiting all year for your raise.
Oh!
You get it, and then your health insurance premium goes up, and you're taking home less than you were before the raise. That's the worst.
Oh, yes, it is.
Do you have the same issue?
Oh, no comment in case anyone from my office is listening.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
I will say, you have a job that has benefits. Coming from a freelancer, I'm just saying.
Right, so maybe the worst in context.
In context. Right. I'd say that's still like a privilege worst.
All right, 630 says, the worst, a restaurant adding a ridiculous substitution charge without telling you when complain. You're told it's mentioned in the menu in font 8 on the bottom of page 3.
What's a substitution charge?
So I know this. I mean, the idea that if you say, I don't eat chicken, so can I get shrimp instead? They will sometimes put a $2 charge on because the value is not the same.
Okay, well, $2, that's not that bad. But if you're talking like $20, then I'd
listen
be like,
to you. So the last verse, you're like, oh, Mr. Privilege with your free. Oh,
yeah,
free
right?
Now you're like, $2? Who cares about $2? It's one way or the other there, Sarah.
I guess I'm inconsistent. I don't know.
My dad had a great one time where he's a vegetarian and he was, I forgot what restaurant it was, but they had asked him, he wanted to get the chicken and shrimp dish, but he didn't want the chicken. Just with the shrimp. And the guy goes, do you want double shrimp instead? He goes, well, that'd be nice. And when the bill came, it was a $4 extra charge. And he was so great because he goes, excuse me. Yeah, I have a question. And at the end, he goes, is this shrimp right here, this $4, is this the shrimp you offered me? And the guy's like, yeah. And he's like, I just wanted to know that.
Or if you're at like a really nice restaurant and then they're like, here are all the specials, but they don't tell you the prices.
Yeah, right.
Where it's like, hey, this is the day of special and you don't know how much it is.
Are you the kind of diner that will say how much?
Ooh. It depends on most of the time,
no.
Depending on who
it's too
I'm
fine
with.
Dining, right?
No. It's too fine dining. You can't do that because then you look like you're a cheap person.
Yeah, but I like that danger in there. The halibut. How much for the halibut?
I think we're doing that next time we go out.
Yeah, do it. Just
I'm
for the fun of it.
We could play it's like restaurant roulette, right? We'll just like not know.
It's fun to mess with the social contract. They, of course, think they want to intimidate you. So instead, give them a little bag. The mahi-mahi. What's the price on that? And then they barely even know either. They're like, $27.99. I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You got them, right? You've changed it. You've changed the status.
I like that social there haggling.
Social haggling. Catherine Pavanelli, Sarah Albritton in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to the second half of the worst. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all. The worst for my people. She come first. You know the worst come the worst.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. And we'll keep you up to date on the fire in London, of course, an apartment complex, 24 stories, Greenfell Tower near Notting Hill. There are 120 apartments in that building. And if you see the pictures online, it's pretty gruesome, the fire. No word on how it started, anything like that. And people are being evacuated. So we'll have more with that coming up with Rob when he updates us in the news in a couple minutes. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst tonight. In studio with me, Sarah Alberton and Catherine Pavanelli. They are the writers of the Super Narcoleptic Girl, the web series. You can find it all at superwebseries.com. They are in the midst of an Indiegogo campaign as they start filming in July. So you can find out all about the series and more about Sarah and Catherine at superwebseries.com. Tonight we're playing the worst. We get a lot of great stuff coming in, so let's get right back to it. 312 says, the worst is me, because sometimes when I'm lazy, I eat the peanuts whole without removing the shell.
That's
a very nine-year-old thing to do.
Yeah, it's like eating the tail and the shrimp, too, like that.
Well, the problem, too, and I don't want to be grotesque, but it's not going in, it's going to be going out. It's going to be the trouble.
Does that even provide any nutritional value?
I guess it's fiber, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Just when you're lazy, you're just too lazy to open it. Is that it? Like, I wonder if he or she does it around other people, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm lazy, so maybe not. Maybe it's just like...
Yeah, yeah. They're not just in the Five Guys just chomping on it.
It's a guilty pleasure. You know, it's like that kind of, no one's around. 3847 says, you know, it's worse listening to a story about a history project for half an hour and never being told what grade it received. That was me. I talked about my son's history project. A+. Sorry, I didn't give the end to that story. We got sidetracked on other stories. But yeah, 40 out of 40, A+. But see, I think next year when he has to do it again and then he's on his own, he's not going to come anywhere near. At some point, he's going to have to fall to find out how to get back up. Wow.
Whoa. Someone's
I'm like
getting
a motivational
deep.
Dad. Yeah. It's about adversity. Wow. Oh, what happened to Justin? Oh. All right. 312-981-7200. 773. The worst is when you find a perfect pair of shoes and you learn that they no longer carry that particular style. And even worse, it's in the evening. It isn't even available in your shoe size. Okay. The worst is when people who breathe down your neck while waiting in line, especially when the line only consists of the two of you.
Oh, gosh. That's awful. That makes you think of Hey Arnold, you know, with the little guy behind Helga.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, that's
that
would
is
be
the
creepy.
Worst. Get out. Yeah.
That would be really creepy.
Are you the kind of person, if there's only two people in line and someone's that close, you say, back up?
I feel like I would back up into them just to freak them out.
You would?
I would probably just like subtly try to move away, and then I'd be like, dude, what's up? Like, there's a bubble of invisible space.
I feel like if it's just the two of you and you're in a line, say at a Jewel, and it's late night and someone's that close that they're breathing, I mean, a couple look backs would probably shake them back, right?
See, I think like if not, then I'd wonder if maybe they're just like one of those like horror movie serial killers in real life, and they're just practicing,
We're operating on the idea that it's someone who's not being nefarious.
Yeah.
Right? So let's just say that they're just not aware of personal space. How do you back them up?
Well, how good looking is this person?
Oh,
see, that, now that you're, is, being, you're that, being nefarious.
That right? is a question. Right. How good looking is this person?
I don't know.
Is their breath, if their breath is bad, then that would be really
yeah,
the worst.
Then that's a double, then that's like a double trouble.
That's right. Terrible.
518 says, you know what's the worst? Beard braids.
Mm.
People
that's
who braid
weird.
Their beard. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Feels like a Bonnaroo kind of thing to do.
Yeah.
Or like if you're in the Spin Doctors, like that's a thing. You guys know that band?
I do. I'm going to do a throwback here. Like, I used to love Lady Lovely Locks growing up, and she had animals that like lived in her hair. So I feel like if you breed, like braid your beard.
If you did
beard,
a good job?
And no, there's like a squirrel in there, I'll accept it.
Only if there's a squirrel
only
or like
small
an animal.
Creatures
a chipmunk.
Are living,
a little
right?
chipmunk, right? But if you're just doing it on your own time, gross.
Yeah, no good, right?
Or you train the squirrel or chipmunk to do the braids. Now that would be very impressive.
Right.
That would be very impressive.
Then you take that show on the road. Then,
then you're the chipmunk braid guy, and you can never shave.
Coming to a pier near you, that's going to be what your job is. All right, 773, coming off as creepy after complimenting a picture of your Facebook friend's daughter. Oh,
ew.
That is the worst.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And 773 is saying it's the idea of coming off creepy, but I think as you heard the response, it was creepy.
Yeah.
Now I want to know what this person said.
And I hope that they would delete it. If they realize it's creepy, then just delete the comment, you know.
But then, are you admitting creep? Like, if you delete it, you're like, oh, I recognize that was a creep. Or if you stand by, you didn't think it was creepy, and you're just going to, you're doubling down on creep.
It's like if you accidentally text somebody, and then there's like a wrong text, and you text your mom sex instead of sec, you know.
Like
autocorrect. You want to correct that, and you're like, oops, I meant second, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of like the same thing. Just delete it, message them privately, be like, oops, I reread that and realized how that came.
Oops, I didn't mean to call your daughter hot. I deleted it.
Yeah, see, I don't think there's any way out. I think you gotta own it. You gotta own it. 847, the worst is loud eaters, people who smack and chomp. It sounds like this could be my wife, because she's very sensitive to that kind of stuff. So I constantly get yelled at for that. And she told me the greatest story about her brother when they were younger, who would scrape the fork. He's a kind of eater. Like, when he would eat, then he would scrape the fork on the way out. And he would almost do it on purpose. Like, when he would at dinner, and one night she flipped out and like flipped the dinner table. Like, or, you know, like the plate and the whole bit. It was this whole thing.
I was going to say, she must be very strong.
Yeah, she was very strong. Not the table, but just the plate. Yeah.
Just imagine her, like, flipping the whole table over.
That's right. You get superhuman strengths. You guys know it. Superheroes.
Truth.
847, when you are walking in a crowd and someone just randomly stops in the middle. Yes, there's nothing worse than that. That is the worst.
Yeah. And then you just have to agree.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. 832 says cereal bags. I think cereal bags are too ridiculous to open.
We've got a lot of problems with opening bags. I think someone needs to have a Shark Tank idea here. I think, like, to open bags easier. We're giving it to the floor for anybody who has a Shark Tank idea.
Here it
is. Go with that.
Easy open bags. 773. The worst is when you're in an arcade and you're literally 3 seconds away from beating the game, and then some dude just comes over and hits second player, then asks if you're okay with it, and then beats you so you can't even continue your game. Now, that's a lot of, like, technical arcade stuff.
That's a very specific...
Yeah. I mean, it's the worst if you're in the... I mean, I guess I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe if you're, like, you're talking about, like, the motorcycle game at Dave & Buster's?
Yeah, I don't know. The only time I've, like, played an arcade are all the beercades, and those I'm just... I don't care, because I've got, like, a handcrafted beer.
There are people that care.
Like, I go to those on dates, basically. It's like, oh, that's the thing to do. Go to the beercade on a date.
There you go. And what if your date's like... What if you're having a great game, and your date's like, can I get in? You'd be like, get out of here.
No, I'll be like, well, I'll be like, are you prepared
to lose? I feel
like
that's a double entendre question.
Yeah, right? All right, let's go to Rick. Rick, what's the worst, Rick?
What's the worst is when you go for a job interview, and the woman that is interviewing you realize that you had turned her down in her sexual advances years before.
No way. That's a sitcom. You're just doing the single guy plot. Really?
No, true story.
What are you doing that? Did she recognize it? Did she obviously didn't get the job? What happened?
Actually, I did.
You got the job?
I did get the job.
I don't want to know what you had to do for that job, buddy.
Been there many years now.
All right. Well, that's an interesting one. Well, that's awkward.
That was a wee bit uncomfortable. Yes, it was.
All right. Well, there you go, Rick. Thank you for you for sharing that personal story. All right. I like that one. All right, let's go to Dave. Dave!
Hey, I got another job interview one.
Oh, perfect. Back to back.
No. The person interviewing you, and you're sitting close to them, has really, really bad breath.
Mm.
And you're about ready to pass out, even though you're trying desperately to make the best impression possible.
How close are you to them in the interview?
Well, enough for the, you know, I don't really know about the physics of, you know, breath molecules, but they can travel. They can travel. And you're trying there, you know, to make, do your best to be a good person. They're sitting there killing you.
Yeah.
Suffocating you.
Dave, that's...
Or just any other, you know, sitting next to someone who's talking to you on a plane or a bus.
Yeah, that's the worst. All right, thanks, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we will crown this week's winners on The Worst. Stay with us.
It's going down,
Catherine Pavanelli and Sarah Albritton in studio. They are the writers and creators behind Super Narcoleptic Girl. Superwebseries.com is the site. Comedians in Chicago, writers, we are playing The Worst. 312-981-7200. We have a million texts to get to, so I'm going to try to go rapid fire so we can get to the prize round here. So, pedestrians who cross during the green turn arrow, the worst. Yes, that's the worst. The worst are drains and hotel showers. You always have to shower with a few inches of water around your feet.
Oh. Oh, that's pretty bad.
The worst are free samples at the grocery store. You eat the sample, but mostly just drop it on the ground. So now, now that salsa and tortilla chips become something I have to clean off my shoe. That's specific, yeah.
Very specific.
They're mad. Mary's sample. Mad. I like it. All right. Now let's get some of the new ones. 506 says the worst, all Sharknadoes, past, present, and future. Really not in the Sharknado. 847. Those are great. The worst is rice cakes. I remember
just,
that
just
was
rice cakes. Just rice cakes.
My mom got on a kick where we would go to a co-op when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and so rice cakes were a big part of that. Like it felt like we didn't get chips, we got rice cakes. So like I have a PTSD on rice cakes. Like I just every time I see a rice cake, I'm like, it's just this and the brown berry bread.
Oh, like those things. Weird. Yeah. Oh,
I've never had that.
Grape nuts. Those three things will make me go, for my childhood. And Hawaiian punch. All right. 773, the doctor's office calls on a Friday, and you got to wait all weekend for the results.
Yeah.
708, when you have a staff meeting, you leave for work, and you're walking out of the viaduct to the L, and a pigeon poops on your head.
That's good luck. What?
If a bird poops on your head, it's considered good luck.
708 says the worst is when you see a hot chick in the store. Okay. And you get next to her and you notice she's looking at her feet fungus spray. She's looking at feet fungus spray. All right. I don't know if that's the worst.
Yeah.
People get feet fungus. It's all good. It's all good.
She's taking care of it at least.
Yeah, right. 815.
At least she's doing something about
doing
it.
Something
it'd be
about
worse
it.
If like she had it and she's like, I'm just going to live with the fungus. No big deal.
Yeah, right. She's already working on self-care. 815. The worst is people in the grocery store who block the whole aisle with the cart. Yep. 312, people who say 50 is the new 40, liars. Oh, the worst is when you upset your father enough for him to throw the Thanksgiving turkey at you during dinner. Wow. That like I just asked a question on that one. Was that was what you were trying to get, right? If you get a dad that's throwing a Thanksgiving turkey, you said that was a goal of yours. But you're like, yeah, I feel like I gotta see if dad will throw the turkey.
That takes a lot of effort, I feel.
Yeah. another more doctor's office calls. The worst, when on a long flight, the guy in front of you reclines asleep the seat and refuses to move and then falls asleep. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
312.
That happens to me a lot. I'll just fall asleep.
Yeah, right. 312. Foghorn. The foghorn nose blow in public.
Oh.
I like that one. Honk. Honk. Mm. 773 says, "Hey, genius! They sell peanuts without the shells removed. With the shells removed." Oh, come on, man.
Worst is when someone gets so upset about how someone eats their peanuts.
Who cares? Yeah, exactly. 214, the worst is pigeon poop on the car. You can never get it out. Burns the paint. 832, when it's hot and your deodorant fails early in your day. Oh, yeah, that's good. That's no good.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
The worst, the biggest sustained lie out there right now, that M&Ms melt in your mouth, not in your hands. No, I always have to bite mine. They don't just melt, too. The colors always come off of my clammy little hands. That's so funny.
You could put the M&Ms in the freezer, then they won't melt. That's a little trick.
Or just avoid your hands entirely. Open the bag. Guys, again, bags. And, just dump them right in your mouth.
Yeah, just pour
avoid them. The hand.
Right, right, right. All right, so 312-981-7200. Let's wrap it. We're good. We're good. And time. We did it. Ooh, Sarah Hall Britton, Catherine Pavanelli. You can see them at superwebseries.com for their web series, Super Narcoleptic Girl, which they are producing in July. They only got 9 days left of the Indiegogo campaign, so go check it out. And if you like it, give them some money so they can put this together. All right. Tonight, we've got some gifts, some prizes. Complimentary pass to 2 adults and 2 children. General admissions to Sycamore Speedway. Ooh. This 2017 race season. Sycamore Speedway, the Midwest's finest clay track and family-owned since 1960. Visit sycamorespeedway.com. Ooh. Cool. Nice. And, of course, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep-dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right. We have picked 3, and we are going to go after them now. Let's go with 773. You're going to get the Sycamore Speedway. Coming off as creepy as after complimenting a picture of your Facebook friend's daughter.
Yep.
Agreed.
You guys gravitated to that one.
Yeah, we feel the pain.
Philosophical moment for you. You're like, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah.
All right, for the pizzas, 847. The worst is when people who breathe down your neck while waiting in line, especially when the line only consists of the 2 of you. That's good. You got to give the backup glance. Back up. Mm-hmm. It's a glance. And finally, first place, and they are going to get a pizza as well. 518. You know what's the worst? Beard braids.
Yes!
Sarah, Catherine, thank you so much for playing tonight. We appreciate it. Good to see you guys, and I hope to have you back soon.
Thanks you for having us.
All right, that's going to do it for the download tonight. Brian Noonan in for us tomorrow. Patty Vasquez in now. Hi, Patty.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Was that the first time Ro ever asked you about the crosstalk and how long it takes?
It was surprising. It's all right. I love it. I have no problem with it. I never once thought anything about it.
It's nice that they're very comfortable.
Yeah, right?
That's good.
I guess for me, I always like to, I feel like half the time I'm the one that's like keeping them around, so. It works out for me that...
Well, they wouldn't do something they don't want to do, it works out just fine.
Yeah, it works out. It works out. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There it is.
There you go, Rob. You got it. What's on the show tonight, Patty?
We have comedian Kevin Naughton's going to join us. John Tatey from the AV Club. We're going to learn about a flossing app. Do you floss every night?
I do not. No.
All right. Maybe this will help you remember
to
floss.
I would love an app that would remind me.
We'll gamify your gums.
I get into good sort of long... Not ruts, but I will do it where I get on it. I'm disciplined for like a week, and I'm like, yes, now I'm back. I'm flossing like crazy, and I'm like,
floss king.
It.
You become the floss king for a week.
For like a week. Yeah, it's never any good.
So we're talking about that for all Trending Tuesday, and then the Women's Comedy Festival is at Stage 773 this week. So
I heard
we have
promo.
The kids. Yeah.
I'll be here. When is your show?
My show is on Sunday. Sometimes Mommy Swears.
Yeah.
I swear it's just sometimes.
How often do you do you do it every year, that festival?
I've done it every year for the last couple of years. That's They've awesome. Been kind enough to give me a stage. I do. It's a lot of fun. A lot of great shows. They start on Thursday night and run through Sunday night. So that's at stage773.com.